a lot of strangely wealthy members of Congress. I'm trying to connect the dots of how do they become rich while earning, how do they get $20 million if they're earning $200,000 a year? Nobody can explain that. We're going to try to figure it out and certainly stop it from happening.
That was an extremely bold and, quite frankly, courage-filled statement yesterday in Wisconsin by Elon Musk. He's not only exposing the millions and millions of Social Security numbers willfully given to illegal aliens so they can vote, so they can get benefits, so they can do fraudulent tax rebate checks, but that if you look at the Democrats particularly, but it's some Republicans like Mitch McConnell, they get into office with no money, AOC, and end up with tens of millions, even hundreds of millions of dollars. And the worst offenders of insider trading and all sorts of other corruption are the Democrats. So now they've been cutting off the U.S. aid money that the CIA uses covertly. They've been cutting off the EPA money. They found the $375 billion that Podesta secretly grabbed, not just $20 billion. It gets worse by the day. And now he's saying, hey, how do these people get into office with nothing, end up being fabulously rich? Well, we know how. Incredible levels of corruption. Everything you saw with the Biden crime family and the way they did it is the exact same way the Democrats have been doing it, and they are the grand champions of it. The Republican Party's been warmongering in the past, evil, corrupt, has major problems, but if you study them throughout history, the Democratic Party are the original party from the start of the country. They know where the bodies are buried, and I'd say 90% of the outrageous corruption we see from them. It is just amazing. We've seen Lindsey Graham and John McCain's foundation with Senator Cotton, you know, being on the board and getting massive amounts of taxpayer money themselves as part of the Ukraine war. So that goes on. But still, they are junior partners in this. And a lot of that is because the Democrats, even when Republicans get in, have their people in the Justice Department. And if a Republican has a crooked toenail, unless they're a neocon or a warmonger, they get indicted for even small-level corruption, but not the Democrats. They've literally had a license to steal, and now Elon Musk is coming out and is taking a wrecking ball to that. And he understands, and so does Trump. There have got to be prosecutions of people at every level, including at the highest levels, because the Democrats are going to do what they've done, financing, it's on record, Brazil, to take Bolsonaro off the ballot, not let him run, and then indict him for made-up stuff. Marie Le Pen, the great populist patriot, has been convicted by a judge of embezzlement. She's been stripped off the ballot so she can't run. And, of course, she's ahead to win the presidency in all the polls by massive numbers. They've arrested and done the same stuff to the guy that won, Colleen Georgescu in Romania. Now they're talking about doing it in Poland and Germany. They're literally outlawing their political opposition. That's what they tried with Trump, taking him off the ballot. The Supreme Court had to intervene. All the lawfare, that's what they tried with me. They're trying it with Musk because they want to get you. So Musk is absolutely right. This is the highest stakes political poker there is, as I saw Owen Schroyer say earlier today. And all of us that have pledged to bring back the Republic have pledged our names, our treasure, our very bodies in this fight. So I want to thank all the viewers and listeners that understand that Trump, Musk, myself, and others that are under the most attack is because we're the most effective, and we've got the globalist number, and we're reaching so many people. Obviously, I'm way junior to Trump and Musk, and that's fine. This is a dangerous position to be in. But we are, you know, just right down there, third under them, for reaching the most people with the most hardcore information. That's why I need your support at our great sponsor, RealAuthJones.com, where a lot of exclusive items, like the highest quality USP, that means pharmaceutical grade methylene blue, ultra blue, has sold out. It's on a waiting list at TheAlexJones.com, but they held some back at RealAlexJones.com and so much more at RealAlexJones.com. That's how you keep us on the air. Believe me, you will thank me when you try this methylene blue. What it does would take hours to get into, but it is just game-changing when RFK Jr. talks about it, and this is the very best. There's a lot of other great items like the trench knife that's so amazing that sold out at TheAlexJones.com. It's at RealAlexJones.com right now. And so much more. So thank you so much for your support. Keep us in the fight. We're fighting together, and I can't do it without you. So I respectfully again ask for your support at RealAuthShows.com. The eighth coin in the limited edition series is now exclusively available at thealexjonesstore.com. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the eighth in the series. Your past purchases have kept us on the air. There's only 4,000 of this coin. I designed all the others, but the crew said, hey, people keep asking for an Alex Jones coin. This is the first and probably the only one we'll ever do. InfoWars on the back, myself, the American flag on the front with my signature. It is vital to keep us on the air. Plus, this is an amazing coin. All the other in the last seven, the last few years we put out, you look at them online, they're selling for way more than we printed them up. But I'm not even pushing it as a collectible coin. It is a fundraiser to keep us on the air. We absolutely need the funds. It is historic, and it costs us about $40.
It's Tuesday, April 1st, in the year of our Lord, 2025. And you're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
I think it's time to blow this thing, get everybody in the stuff together. Okay, 3, 2, 1, let's jam.
We are inundated with propaganda fabricating one engineered New World Order crisis directive after another.
Musk announced the decision after conducting an online poll. He tweeted, quote, "The people have spoken. Amnesty begins next week."
You know, the Russians are waiting for something like this. They need a propaganda campaign against the United States and against our support for Ukraine. And they're going to be all over Twitter. I guarantee this. Supporting the far right.
Phase 2 of Operation Lockstep calls for more 5G radiation to affect the immune system of the public, combined with the heavy metals found in the vaccines.
This video clip is an example of the phenomenon using pendulum oscillators of different phases on a common platform suddenly sync up given enough time. Toxic symptoms, information, can be transmitted to and from individuals or the group very efficiently, even if they move away from the initial source. The bodies of the injected provide the electrical power, like a battery, to continue resonating these fields, effectively turning them into wireless repeaters and routers. We're witnessing lethal damage by EMF irradiation. The more graphene oxide, the greater the damage. The contagion is not a contagion because there is no pathogen.
Other early signs of phase two within human civilization, there will be an increase of military checkpoints.
These signs, either side of the road with the red in between painted on the road, are showing up all around the exit roads to the main townships in the Tablelands. And this is the base. It can be changed into a roadblock.
And more large-scale food shortages, which will force people to only be able to access essential products or services if they are awarded permission. Crushing discrimination against dissenters by corporations and banks. And the implementation of central bank digital currencies. The World Economic Forum is pushing for a global ID by 2026, fueled by blaming the average citizen for their carbon footprint.
Why is the World Economic Forum bothering with digital identity? Why are we looking into it? Why is it such an important topic for us?
How we construct and use digital identities would determine mm-hmm. how people are represented online, what opportunities they have access to, what or who is trusted online.
So it's also a very important tool for financial inclusion.
The starting point where a number of actors, you know, from the international development community and the private sector and everything in between have started to come together to think about what principles should be governing the use of these systems.
Yet, not a word from the Bilderberg attending industries that continue to produce endocrine system hormone blockers within phthalates and bisphenol A in plastics to pesticides in our food to shampoo to receipts to water bottles to electronics to cleaning products and carpets. Regardless of the fact that the chemicals from these industries could wipe out the human race by 2045, as leading reproductive epidemiologist Shanna Swan and her team of researchers found that during the past 40 years, sperm levels among men in Western countries had more than halved and could deplete to zero by 2045 due to the toxicity of plastic.
When did this stuff start getting into our food supply?
The growth of these chemicals tracks with the growth of the petrochemical industry. So back in 1950, there's this better living through chemistry that everyone's talking about, and everybody is just wanting everything made of plastic. That's just one example of the many chemicals that can affect our hormone system.
And they must be stopped before phase three results in the release of a weaponized SARS-HIV-MERS virus that could make a nuclear war look like sympathy. John Bound reported.
All right, folks, that is the latest from John Bound. Find shared at Infowars.com, band.video. Operation Lockstep lurks in the shadows, and it's hard to overstate the number of threats that we're facing, and it's a little bit frustrating knowing that there's so much going on that's not being confronted and that's being allowed to persist because we're being distracted by a whole bunch of other insane things. And yes, today's topic of the day is, once again, World War III, as we seem to be inching ever closer to the cusp, to the edge of the abyss, and the ultimate betrayal of Donald Trump if he actually does go to war with Iran. War in the Middle East. I was just listening to an explanation as to how Donald Trump could serve a third term, caveats or loopholes in the 22nd Amendment. And I was thinking, well, for one thing, he's got to earn it. For one thing, he's got to actually finish out this term as a success for us to want another one, which would mean not going to war in the Middle East. But then there's a little trick. There's like a cheat code that's just been discovered. It's called the Zelensky loophole, and it's if you declare war, then you can be a dictator, and it's fine. It's very convenient, and so I guess that's the choice Trump has to make, is do you want to avoid war and be a president that people want to having a third term, or do you want to go Zelensky-style, declare war, declare that you can't have elections until the war's over, never let the war end, and be a dictator for life? I guess that's one little loophole. That's one workaround for the 22nd Amendment. But he's got to avoid war first. And I know a lot of people are, you know, still sort of pushing the argument like this is all negotiation tactic. I saw somebody yesterday, I think it was Drago something on X, but he was publishing all these headlines from Trump's first term, where it was like Trump threatens North Korea, Trump threatens Russia, Trump threatens all these people, you know, pointing to that and going, look, this is what Trump does. He threatens people, but it's all actually in the pursuit of peace. And like, that's fine, but we're being set up for another Pearl Harbor. We're being set up for a false flag attack, not even necessarily a false flag attack, just instigating conflict with Iran. And then, of course, how easy would it be for Iran or somebody else in the Middle East to blow up a warship, blame it on Iran, and kick the war off that way? I know what you're thinking. I've seen this one before. And yeah, no, it didn't work in 1967, but doesn't mean they won't try again. So we have China. Don't know if you guys saw what China's up to. I'm kind of confused at what China's up to. Like, I don't know if there's ever been a situation like this. I was trying to think back in history. You have this country of Taiwan that is independent for all intents and purposes, right? It signs its own agreements. It has security guarantees with America. It's not really in China, but China just insists that it is China. And I mean, I guess the analog in history would be Hong Kong or Tibet or any other number of, you know, smaller countries on the periphery of China that China basically has absorbed like a giant blob, like a giant meat-eating blob of some sort. And that would be the way that I'm sure China would prefer to take Taiwan, sort of in the way that they did with Hong Kong, by doing some sort of security agreement with them and then censoring anti-China activity, crush any opposition, and just fold it democratically into China through the vote process. I'm sure they'd rather do that. But the fact that you have this giant country, China, routinely surrounding Taiwan with aircraft and ships, and then coming out and saying, yeah, this is in preparation. We're practicing for the blockade that we're going to do. We're just practicing for the war that we're going to launch. We're just practicing, you know, in the area where we're actually going to wage war. China launches military drills around Taiwan, calls its president a parasite. Okay, very nice. It just seems weird to me. It's like, okay, either go to war or don't. What is this? What is this like constantly surrounding, like every month or so, they're surrounding Taiwan with warships and planes. Saying, yeah, we're just practicing for our invasion. We're going to carry it out later. Not right now. Don't worry about it. Just be on your toes because it is coming. We are going to dominate you. We are going to fold you forcibly, you know, into our country. Just not now. It's cool. Don't worry about it. We're just practicing. Just getting everything in order. Testing your reaction times. Like it's very weird how they do that over and over again. But clearly they are making very big moves. Russia now is getting into it with Iran. Russia warns of catastrophic consequences if U.S. strikes Iran. Russia has warned the U.S. that any military attack on Iran's nuclear sites would have catastrophic effects. So Deputy Foreign Minister Sergei Ryabkov calls for peaceful negotiations. Russia warns the U.S. against attacking Iran's nuclear sites. Say U.S. threats may escalate tensions, says Russia's Deputy FM. Foreign Minister, Moscow offers to mediate between U.S. and Iran. Russia issued a warning against the U.S. stating that military attacks on Iran's nuclear facilities will have catastrophic effects. This comes after U.S. President Donald Trump threatened to bomb Iran unless the country comes to an agreement with Washington on its nuclear activities. Speaking in an interview with International Affairs Journal, Russia's Deputy Foreign Minister Sergei Ryabkov raised concerns over the issue. He stressed that threats and ultimatums will increase tension. Threats are indeed being heard. Ultimatums are also being heard, Ryabkov said. We consider such methods inappropriate. We condemn them. We consider them as a way for the U.S. to impose its own will on the Iranian side. In spite of current tensions, Russia has refrained from directly criticizing the U.S. president and said Moscow has left its diplomatic aspirations intact. They've already indicated readiness to act as a mediator between the U.S. and Iran after the strategic partnership treaty with Iran was signed in January. So, yes, Trump threatened Iran unless Iran agrees with Washington on the nuclear program. Iran, meanwhile, has said that they're not interested in direct negotiations and has apparently targeted Diego Garcia, the base nearby, not even nearby, just out there in the Indian Ocean, for destruction because it's Diego Garcia, that base, that has the only B-52 stratospheric jets that can deliver, you know, certain high payload nuclear weaponry. And so Iran is just like sending a signal to America going, well, tell you what, you want to try to bomb us or threaten us with nukes, which they have. And we went over yesterday how there's these bombing raids that they're running in conjunction with Israel using B-52s, not because they're necessary for the bombing runs that are actually being carried out, but because they're a signal to Iran that these are the planes we use to drop nuclear bombs. Look how close we can get to Iran and drop these bombs. So they've been sending those signals, and Iran is sending the signal, okay, if you want to make those threats, then we want it known that we can obliterate Diego Garcia in an afternoon with ballistic hypersonic missiles that you can't track, let alone stop. So, yeah, tension's ratcheting up. So, again, even if this is a negotiation tactic of Trump, even if this is just a maximum pressure campaign to try to get concessions from Iran, what is to stop the conflict from breaking out regardless of Trump's design? What would happen if Iran hit Diego Garcia, or if Israel sunk a ship and blamed it on Iran, or if Israel attacks Iran, Iran lets loose retaliates against not only Israel, but America as well, then we're into this giant conflict. And, yeah, all signs are pointing in that direction. Again, I am being a little bit vague about it, but I do have people with sources in the Pentagon telling me that it's going to be this week that Israel is going to attack. And actually, the latest rumor is that the American CENTCOM commander, Michael Kurila, is now meeting with Israeli Chief of Staff Eyal Zamir in an underground military bunker, Kiria, in Tel Aviv. Megatron posting this saying things are about to get serious. So U.S. CENTCOM commander is in some sort of underground military bunker with the Israeli Chief of Staff, plotting, planning, designing World War III against the wishes of everyone on Earth. So Trump wants to run for a third administration. I would say the number one thing he could do is not get us into yet another senseless, stupid war in the Middle East. And I would even go so far as to not open up the possibility of war in the Middle East, because clearly we're being set up for a false flag attack that would be extremely dangerous. But again, it's just World War III, and we could get more into all of that a little bit later. I do have a bunch of just crazy stories here. I'm sure everybody heard. There hasn't been too much updated since yesterday afternoon, but Epstein victim and Prince Andrew accuser Virginia Giuffre, I think it's how you pronounce it, has days to live after car wreck. Which, yeah, I don't know if I've ever heard of something like this. I mean, usually if it's a car wreck and somebody dies, it's sort of an outright thing, or they're so injured, they're just in critical condition. And, you know, it doesn't take long, or maybe they go into a coma or something. But apparently, this woman was hit by a school bus going like 100 miles an hour. It's completely insane in and of itself. But then she's in the hospital and is like, my kidneys are failing. I only have 4 days to live. I've never heard of anything like that. That's just... I don't know. I guess that's a thing. I guess that's possible. Just a lot of bizarre occurrences here. A school bus going 100 miles an hour. A little bit strange. Crashing into this woman. All of this, of course, happening as the drama about Epstein continues to unfold. It's been like 5 weeks or something since Pam Bondi said the documents would be released. Since then, we've heard about truckloads of documents, and we heard about 1,000 FBI agents pouring through the documents. I just don't believe any of this. I'm sorry to be skeptical here, but like, what could they possibly be doing? What could 1,000 FBI agents possibly be spending their time on these documents for 5 weeks, 3 weeks, however long? 1,000 FBI agents working 40 hours a week, what are they doing? It really doesn't make any sense. So the fact that they haven't released them yet means that there are still remnants of this network in operation behind the scenes, trying to stop the release from coming out, you know, wielding influence to prevent the releases coming out, and possibly murdering the victims. Again, I don't have any proof to point to. I'll just say, when you hear a school bus is going 100 miles an hour and slams right into one of the few public and acknowledged victims of Jeffrey Epstein, I think it's worth asking a few questions. Asking a few questions about this. Again, we can bring you more reports on that a little bit later, but we're at the point now where I think we just kind of have to assume that nothing is as it seems. I know that there's still a remnant or a portion of the population that's still in this mindset that it's like dangerous to question things. I hope we all recognize we have moved beyond. We should all have moved beyond that point, to the point where absolutely nothing that we hear in the official story should be taken at face value. Absolutely everything should be just assumed to be some sort of gigantic lie, some sort of gigantic scheme, probably just part of a much larger, you know, act of treason. And then, you know, if it turns out that it's all on the up and up, then great. But let's just start with the assumption when the accuser of Prince Andrew and the person pictured with him, one of the few public Epstein accusers, almost dies in a frankly absurd set of circumstances, I think we can just assume that there's a deep state activity in play. And I'm going to show some videos today. If you remember Sarah Stock, we had on because she was talking about xenophobic immigration policies in this program called Jubilee, I guess, or it's called Surrounded. And the company that puts it on is called Jubilee. And the latest one is a doctor arguing with anti-vaxxers. And I want to go through a couple clips from these debates because the doctor represents the mindset that I was just describing of just like people still stuck in the paradigm of like, don't ask questions. Asking questions is dangerous. The system is good. The bureaucracy is unquestionable. And skepticism is dangerous, if not a crime, if not an attack on your fellow Americans. So I want to go to some of those videos. I've compiled sort of some of the best ones, some of my favorite ones. Of course, they don't always bring up the best people to argue. It's actually kind of a brilliant setup for propaganda, this Jubilee style of debate or interview, because you have, and Charlie Kirk does it too at colleges, where he sits up and you have a stream of people come up and ask questions and debate. And yeah, it's an extremely effective propaganda tool to have one person that's like the authority that's sitting there that doesn't move, that everybody else comes up and, you know, sits in front of and gets like a minute or two, like a audience with the Pope or something. You know, they get to go and they get to argue, and then you pick like 20 people that just aren't quite as smart or as good as the one person you put in the middle. So you basically just have them defeat one person after another. It's very well constructed. It's very well constructed to have the potential of propaganda. I don't think it does. I don't think it actually works, though, because the people debating the doctor is very condescending and self-satisfied and just sort of comes across like a slime ball. And the people arguing against him might not have a doctorate, might not have total command of the facts, but just simple, basic common sense destroys so much of what the doctor says. So I'm going to go to those videos in the next segment. Stay with us. A lot to cover today. A lot of videos to show you. Thank you for taking your calls as well. Stay with us. It's the American Journal, Infowars.com.
Methylene blue is all the rage. But for my listeners, we've been talking about it for decades. But finally, they've got factories. They've got laboratories that are producing medical, pharmaceutical, USP grade. And so, our sponsor, thealexjonesstore.com, has it right now. The very highest quality. And I've taken USP grade before, and they claim it's USP grade. It works great. Massive energy, clarity, focus, no letdown. This is 10 times better. I'm actually scared of this. I've seen Robert F. Kennedy Jr., you know, take 3 droppers on Air Force One. I took half a dropper, and I'm bouncing off the walls hours later. Ladies and gentlemen, we have the very best methylene blue I've ever had at the lowest price, and it funds the InfoWar, a total 360 win. So get your ultra, and it is ultra, methylene blue right now at thealexjonesstore.com.
Here's where all eyes now are on gold and silver. Because gold went over $3,000 an ounce, it's at an all-time high. That's a very strong technical and psychological threshold number, that 3,000. So now that the world is looking at gold, the world is also going to be looking at silver. So even the massive growth that we've already seen, I'm guessing it's just the beginning.
Gut level, where do you think gold is in a month?
3,100 in a month, like in the next 3 to 4 weeks. And then I think it gets to 3,200 by the beginning of the summer. And we could literally see 4,000 as momentum starts to gather and as the eyes of the world get on it. And then silver, you know, probably 50 to 75.
People need to call you, do a free consultation, leave your name and number, 720-605-3900, kpm.com/gold. Do the form. They'll call you back. They'll do a free consultation. They can roll over your IRAs, 401ks. Do it now, folks. Dr. Kirk Elliott, thank you so much.
My pleasure. See ya.
It's good to be right, isn't it? Wow. Unless you've been hiding under a rock, everyone knows that Shilajit is one of the most incredible super nutrients, and they don't even know how it's formed deep under the earth. It's just got incredible amino acids and natural peptides that nothing else has. And what does it do for you? Everything. Your skin, your clarity, your focus. I'm on this stuff. Your wife, your girlfriend will thank you. That's just a little side issue. Shilajit's awesome, but this is the best, purest, strongest Shilajit with a whole bunch of other badass stuff in it. We throw the kitchen sink at you because we want it to work, and it will. And it funds the Second American Revolution worldwide. So get this great t-shirt design and hundreds of others, the biggest selection, at thealexjonesstore.com, funding the Second American Revolution worldwide. God almighty.
Taking a record of the hearts and minds of the American people, it's the American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Got a lot to talk about today in terms of World War III, the invasion, and just so much more. And we're planning to get to all of it. But I want to take a moment to respond to some clips that have been going around, going a little bit viral from this show. I guess the show is called Surrounded, but it's put on by this YouTube channel called Jubilee. And it's a pretty interesting setup that they have. And I guess I recognize some of the people in this one from the last one about race, where the big viral clip was Sarah Stock talking about the European roots of America. So I see some of the same people coming up. Some of these people did really well. Regardless, what you can see is a lot of the rhetorical trickery that's used to justify unquestioning adherence to the medical industry. And I think, I mean, the whole thing is a little bit nonsensical because of what they did with the word vaccine. Because they wanted to get everybody on mRNA technology. And this isn't my speculation, like from their own words, from Anthony Fauci being like, we have this new technology, but it's going to be hard to get everybody to adopt it. So we need some sort of big event to get people in a position where they're willing to try this experimental technology that's not a vaccine, doesn't work like a vaccine, doesn't work like a normal vaccine. Doesn't vaccinate you, right? Doesn't actually make you immune. Doesn't actually stop you from getting or transmitting the. So I don't know. I don't know if they were like fully considering what the consequences would be of calling it a vaccine. they wanted to adopt the vaccine label to sort of absorb the trust people have in vaccines and to take advantage of the pre-existing bias against anti-vaxxers. But what they've actually done is destroy the credibility of vaccines because everybody sees what a outrageous failure the COVID vax was. And they lose trust in all vaccines. So this doctor, like a lot of the issues that he's running into, I think, is this idea that he's trying to defend vaccines, which technically include the COVID vaccine. It works for them sometimes, but sometimes doesn't. It's kind of like when they will be arguing against the Second Amendment, and they'll use stats where they'll have some giant number of death by guns, and they'll be like, that's why we have to get rid of assault rifles. It's like, okay, but the stat you used was handguns. So now using this stat to go after assault rifles, like, yeah, they're technically guns, but you're being dishonest in the way that you're using the numbers. It's sort of like they can go, well, vaccines have been used for hundreds of years, and this vaccine is a vaccine, so therefore it should absorb all of the predisposition about vaccines from vaccines, but they're completely different things. Anyway, the whole conversation is kind of nonsensical because they're talking about two completely different things, but they have to use the same word to talk about them. So it all gets a little bit confusing. But let's go to some of these videos. Let's go. Let's begin with clip number four, because this guy, I think, gets the best of the doctor. And again, the doctor kind of doesn't have a leg to stand on after COVID-19. You should be skeptical of the medical industry. We have every reason to distrust the medical experts, and that's their fault. And they're only making it worse by refusing to acknowledge the very real concerns that Americans have about the vaccine program or the medical industry overall. So let's go to clip number four now.
Can I ask you a question in terms, because as a vaccine skeptic, the burden of proof is on you to show that vaccines do work. So what evidence would you have that vaccines actually work?
So we have all stages of the vaccine process monitored because we are trying to do our best to make sure that we help children and adults when they are due for a vaccine.
Okay, so you just, at the end, you said it pretty much sounds like you have to have a good intention.
Pause it. I'll probably be pausing a lot. But you understand he didn't. That wasn't an answer to the question that was asked. It's pretty much every question. He's asked a question, and he just sort of says this kind of blanket, almost like, you know, corporate HR speak response. So the guy's like, what evidence do you have that the vaccines work? The guy's like, well, we monitor all parts of the vaccine because we care about people and we're doing our best. It's like, it's not even close to an answer, actually. That's not even remotely addressing the question at all, even a little bit, actually, if you think about it. So you'll notice that. He practically never answers a question that's asked. It's very weird. It's very bizarre how this happens. I mean, I can't imagine actually going to a doctor and having them answer like this for medical questions. Is the tumor malignant? He's just like, the tumor is, we're certainly going to monitor it with machines. It's like, okay, and like, what does that mean? You're monitoring it because it's malignant or because it's benign? Like, what do you mean? You have to give me an answer here. You have to give me some sort of diagnosis, prognosis. You have to answer the questions. So let's go back to this guy again. Just did not answer the question. Instead, just asserted that actually we are great guys. We are great. Because remember, he sees himself as the member of a distinct community that he's defending. It's not himself or his own personal participation in this. It's the system that he is an avatar for when he says we. So he didn't answer the question. He has no the proof that vaccines work to him are because he's really trying hard, I guess. Let's go back to the doctor, to Dr. Mike.
You just, at the end, you said it pretty much sounds like you have to have a good intention. For example, we're not in the labs actually seeing the vaccine process or the clinical trials, so we have to just take the expert's word and trust it, right?
Well, when you fly in a plane, you're not in the cockpit.
Right. So we put our faith in that. So you would say that we just have to put our faith in the experts, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So this would require, number one, a good intention. So they have a good intention to help people, to make their lives better, and also they have to be ethical. Is that correct?
Those are reasonable things, yeah.
Okay, so if they fall outside of the purview of those two criteria, would you say it is reasonable for us to be skeptical?
I think it's reasonable to be skeptical at any moment.
But taking those two things, if they violate either of those two, would it give someone else more justification to be against it?
Sure.
Okay. So when we look at the biggest developers and distributors and sellers of the vaccines, Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, all these big pharmaceutical companies, when we look at their track record, we see they have been deceptive. They've had big settlements, billions and billions of dollars, fraud, misleading the public, concealing clinical trials that were against their favor from the public. So when we have to put our whole faith and trust in these people that have been through huge billions of dollars of settlements, and they have proven that they have been unethical, they have made more profit through the COVID times than ever before as well, why should we trust them so lightly, taking into consideration the fact that we're not in the labs with them, taking the fact that they are profiting from our well-being? Why should we trust them so lightly?
It's not a blind trust. Who you're trusting is the independent reviewers that review the data that they put forward.
Okay, but is this political or is this science?
Health is as much public health as it is individual health.
Okay, but would you say guys like Dr. Peter McCullough or Dr. Rich, would you say that they are probably not good experts that we should adhere to?
I don't know who those people are.
So they're very anti-vax, or they've provided solutions like hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, and they've stated over 200 peer-reviewed studies from different types of trials showing the efficacy of those kind of medications that are alternatives to COVID or the vaccination. But what I'm kind of getting to is that we're supposed to trust this specific agenda. So Pfizer, WHO, which once again, if we look at the track record, they haven't had a great track record. So it sounds like to me it's more of a political thing instead of a science thing. When you guys say trust the science and trust the experts, you actually mean this group of experts. Because whenever big experts like RFK, even if you want to say he's not a doctor, he's not licensed, but his friends, Peter McCullough, Dr. Rich, they are great experts. They've had some of the most reviewed studies in the medical field. I don't see why we have to deny their science and their expertise and go with this set of people.
I think when you look at the grand scheme of things, you have to look at consensus.
Yeah, it's consensus. And we control the consensus. Anybody who contradicts our consensus, we silence. So therefore, the consensus can remain the consensus. There's really nothing you can say to that guy because he's exactly right. Whoever the not the doctor was. And I recognize him from the previous one, and he did a good job there too, because he just sort of goes at it logically. He goes, okay, you want us to trust these people, but here's all the ways they've proved they're untrustworthy, so why should we trust them? Guy's just like, well, it's about consensus. It's like, great. Okay, great. No, good points about consensus. I didn't think about that. Now, it's sort of a constant refrain from these people, these types, the system trusters, where they're like, well, you have to trust people every day. You trust, and the pilot thing is sort of a constant example. You have to trust the pilot. And it's like, okay, but the government isn't compelling me to fly. And the government isn't providing for total secrecy and a settlement fund in the government that pays out victims of plane crashes, and the plane crashes never get reported. And the system that reports plane crashes is opaque and, you know, never reported on by the mainstream media. Things are a little bit different with the medical industry. It's not exactly a one-to-one. Also, the pilot crashes the plane. The pilot also dies. The doctor is not going to die if he gives you a tainted vaccine. So different risk there. He says it's not a blind trust, but you're trusting the independent reviewers. But we know independent reviewers that go against the consensus get silenced. We know that's true. And it's not just, you know, he talks about Pfizer, like these big pharma companies, nobody should trust them. Absolutely nobody should. They've proven that beyond anything. But he mentions WHO as well as being another force that you can recognize as not exactly with our best interest in mind, to say the very least. And that is that's really at the heart of all of it, is these people get put into positions of power. They put themselves, they self-appoint themselves as authorities in the world on a certain thing. And then they utterly fail to uphold the obligations of the role that they fill. The WHO is like the perfect example, right? We were calling what was going on in Wuhan a disaster before they were. Right? So you have this program funded with billions of taxpayer dollars, with officials all over the world. Their sole purpose is monitoring emergent diseases. A disease crops up in China, and they do absolutely nothing about it for months and actually help to cover up the reality behind it. They help to perpetuate the lies about it. They see it not as a obligation or as a duty to, you know, actually fulfill the role that they have taken for themselves. They instead see it as an opportunity to take advantage of the authority they've granted themselves to impose all sorts of controls that have nothing to do with the disease itself. So not only should we not trust these people to actually do what they're supposed to, because they've shown themselves to be utterly incompetent in that regard, but they're dangerous. They're dangerous because when something like COVID-19 actually happens, their first concern is how do we utilize it? How do we take advantage of it? How do we use it to make money and reorganize the world so it looks more like our design? They're willing to cover up for China. They're willing to lie on behalf of China. They're willing to lie to the extent that it allows the disease to spread even further and limits the ability we have to actually understand and therefore counteract the effects of the disease. They impose lockdowns. They start censoring everybody. I mean, the censorship program all came out of the WHO. It was coordinated in a global fashion by the WHO. So not only are these people provably incompetent to do the thing that they are supposed to be doing, but they willfully ignore their responsibility in order to take advantage of, politicize, and weaponize the issues that they're supposed to be confronting. So when Pfizer hears that a big disease just popped out of nowhere, out of a farmer's market in China, their first thought is how much money they can make with it, how they can utilize the disaster situation, the emergency declarations, in order to get government compulsion to buy their products. That's their first and major concern. To where if they have to do things or spread propaganda to increase the emergency situation, to increase the fear and outrage and control that the government has, then that's what they'll do. If they have to bury things like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, because otherwise you would lose the emergency use authorization, right? If there's a viable treatment for a disease, you can't authorize the emergency use of a vaccine. So they'll actually go out and stop people from getting medicine, because if the efficacy of the medicine was known, they wouldn't get their profit from the vaccine program that they're operating. So it's not just that there's every reason not to trust these people. It's just they've shown us time and time again their first concern is not our health. Our health maybe doesn't even crack the top 10 of their concerns when it comes to an emergent disease of some sort. It's profit, control, consolidation, censorship. And then somewhere down the line, they're like, oh, and we want to keep people healthy. But that's far from the top of their concerns. Let's go to another take here. Let's go to clip number one here.
RFK Jr. is a public health threat.
So why do you think he is a threat?
I think that RFK's stances of why he's a public health threat go past the anti-vaccine stances. He's made public statements that HIV doesn't cause AIDS, that poppers, which is a party drug or a recreational drug that people use, is really the reason why AIDS exists. That is not someone who clearly understands science, and I don't want them in charge of a health agency.
Okay, assuming he does become head of the health department, wouldn't he now technically be considered the expert, not an expert, but the expert?
No.
So then, if he put something forth that was anti-vax, and he said we have sufficient evidence to prove this, and then other medical experts such as you, which are pro-vax, went against it, wouldn't now you be categorized as the wrong ones?
No, because it's not based on a single person's opinion. This is a consensus-driven statement, driven by thousands of doctors, dozens of agencies, not just here in the United States, but worldwide as well.
Okay. Do you allow your patients to write bad reviews about you if they had a bad experience?
It's not my choice to write it or not write it.
No, do you allow them? Or would you remove it?
No.
No what?
I would not remove it.
Okay. So if we look at Facebook, Google, YouTube, they suppressed so many anti-vax posts, legitimate declarations of they were injured, serious deaths. ABC News went on Facebook and they posted a simple question. Who do you know or yourself that was seriously injured from the vaccine? Over 200,000 comments that were then removed by Facebook. Mark Zuckerberg just went on Joe Rogan and he said that Joe Biden, the Biden administration, forced them to censor people. So if someone really believes in their product, why would they do mass censorship to hide it?
I'm a family medicine doctor. I have no idea why they're censoring certain websites or not censoring certain websites. Like, that's outside of my scope.
Well, that's outside of your scope, but just using logic, just using reasoning. You said you would not remove your patients' bad reviews, so why would we allow these experts to then remove them, those kind of critics?
Last that I checked, no doctor removes patient bad reviews. No doctor goes on and hides comments.
Well, why not?
Maybe they do it on an individual level, but not on a systemic level.
Okay. I would just say that RFK Jr. Does appeal to other experts that even if they're vaccine skeptics, they put forth legitimate studies that would be antithetical to the pro-vaccine studies. So you said earlier, like, misinformation. I would ask, who is the author of misinformation?
Who is the author of misinformation?
Yeah, so misinformation, first off, is predicated on the fact that there's a right information. Right information is going to be predicated on the fact that there's absolute truth. Does science state absolute truth?
There's no absolute truth, period.
So if there's no absolute truth within this realm, I don't know why we should completely rule out RFK Jr. and the other experts that he could appeal to.
The reason I rule him out is because he takes information that is not true, like that poppers cause AIDS.
Subjectively true.
It's not subjectively true.
For the time being, because you just said it's provisional truth, meaning it can change with time.
Right, but you can create any sort of statement, and in healthcare, we can't just go off of any statement because someone feels subjectively to be true. We have to do our best to do with limited information that we can.
Great point, doctor. So this is the problem. Okay, first of all, going back to even the first clip and there he's talking about there. We talk about Dr. Peter McCullough. He is the most published scientific author ever, or at least living. I'm not sure if ever, but more papers studied about the heart, about medical issues than anybody else in the world. So you talk about experts. This guy's like, I've never even heard of Peter McCullough. It's like, yeah, we know. That's the thing. It's not even necessarily like what he's saying. It's just like what you can read between the lines. He's never heard of Peter McCullough, despite the fact that the man is beyond eminent. He is, again, the most published medical doctor ever. And he also is probably the most prominent voice of the vaccine skeptic. So, this guy, by, making these flippant statements, he's like, I don't even know who those people are. It's like, well, then it proves that you are literally blind to the other side of the argument. You've never looked into the argument. You've never researched the claims of the skeptics because you have no idea. So here you are, condescending to people. You have literally only ever taken in information from one side of the argument. So you're really, revealing yourself there. But also, if you are going to be condescending and talking down to people, it sort of puts you in a tough spot when you then later have to pretend to be stupid. It doesn't really work. you see there's a major disconnect when, you know, he's the doctor, he's the expert, he's just the way he talks is very condescending and talking down to people. And the guy's like, so you let people leave bad reviews, right? Because if you were going in and deleting people's bad reviews, that'd make people not trust you. And Facebook and Google was forced to take down legitimate complaints about the vaccine in order to maintain the perceived manufactured consent over vaccines. That's not a difficult thing to understand, the connection between these two things, how he's using one as sort of an analogy or an example, saying you wouldn't trust a doctor who silenced his critics, right? Well, all of these pharmaceutical companies are silencing their critics. Wouldn't that make you not trust them very well? The guy's like, well, I don't know about individual doctors. It's like, it's not about individual. Like, what are you talking about? Why are you pretending to be stupid? You spend the whole time acting smarter than everybody, but then when you're presented a very simple to understand corollary between an individual doctor getting reviews on a website and a pharmaceutical company or a vaccine deleting comments on Facebook, it's not hard to understand, but this guy's he's completely out of water. He has no idea what's going on. He's just like, but I don't delete reviews from my people. And it's like, yeah, we know, dude. It's like you're acting dumb, and it's making me feel stupid because it's like this isn't hard to understand. It's very simple, and the fact that you can't get it makes you think that one of us is missing something here. So it sort of doesn't work when you act smarter than everybody and then have to pretend to be stupid because you're dishonest and lying, and because you know that if you were to comprehend the point the other person's making, it would show that they're right and you're wrong. So you have to act like you just don't get what he's talking about. Well, I don't, but doctors individually, they might delete comments. I don't know, though. I don't do that. Okay, we're talking about mass censorship by the government of people's own personal recounting of their vaccine injuries because they need to perpetuate the perception that there is no antithesis to what you're saying, because then you get to talk about consensus.
I have been so hot and heavy on the news the last few weeks that I have not come up. Most of me yesterday, I didn't plug one time the whole show because I was just so focused and pissed off about what's going on, because we're winning, but the fight is so dangerous. This is the most intense part right now. And so please go to thealexjonesstore.com. We have the Great Atomic Defense, the strongest, greatest, concentrated of all the known herbs and compounds to boost your immune system. Everybody should be on it, especially this time of year. With the limited edition Trump 2024 Battle for the Republic coin on one side, on the other side, the commemorative inauguration. There's a limited amount of those. About as of this morning, 1/4 of them are gone. There'll be no more made after that. This funds the operation. So I want to thank all of you that have supported. I'll encourage those that haven't gone to thealexjonesstore.com to take action now. The supplements are the best you're going to find anywhere. Become a VIP member for $30 a month. Cancel any time. Get $40 to spend in the store each month. Special sales, special discounts, special offers, and products only to members. Thealexjonesstore.com.
America is waking up to the sad and painful fact that we've been under a multinational globalist deep state intelligence agency controlled coup for decades in this country. We didn't have full control 30, 40 years ago, but they're really attempting full control now, and that's where we are. And InfoWars has engaged in the best long-term analysis of the enemy operation and predicted the resistance movement would form against it, and the fact that we would have major successes against the enemy, but they would then double, triple, quadruple down. That's where we are now. So it's more important than ever that InfoWars stay on the air. I just want to thank you all for your support, spread the word. It's more important than ever that we get funding. We try to make it easier for you to fund us by simply going to InfoWarsStore.com and getting great products that enrich you and your family's lives.
InfoWars.com is tomorrow's news today.
All right, welcome back, folks. I'm going to get one more video from this surrounded debate We'll go to clip number two now. But it, just on the final note, don't you love it when people say there is no absolute truth, but you're wrong because you're taking a subjective view? It's totally inconsistent. They just say things. Like, people just say things. They don't mean anything that they say. And it's sad. This guy's a doctor, but it's one of those things, right? He is just arrogant. I mean, it's just this arrogance that comes across. He goes, there is no absolute truth ever. That was his statement, which is absurd on the face of it. That's fine. It's what these people's worldview is. But then he's willing to demonize Robert F. Kennedy, call him dangerous, because he's wrong, because he's approaching something from a subjective point of view. Even though this guy doesn't believe that there is such thing as objective point of view, somehow he's able to say RFK's point of view is objectively wrong. Anybody else see a little bit of an inconsistency there? Let's go to clip number two. This woman, again, just absolutely gets the best of Dr. Mike. Let's watch.
I am a pediatric hematology oncology nurse.
Wow, okay.
I think a lot of mistrust in my eyes were opened during the whole COVID pandemic.
Why?
Institutions that were there. I used to be in the military, so when I was in the military, I signed my bodily autonomy away. If they told me to do something, I did it.
And thank you for that.
Yeah, thanks.
No, I say that in all seriousness, because I think a lot of times that kind of becomes habit just to say thank you, but I really do mean that. Thank you.
But really, I do
mean
it.
So, seeing, you know, how Dr. Fauci, who was just pardoned, and that's a whole other discussion, seeing how, like, we were sold a bill of goods that we, the American tax dollars, paid for, while these pharmaceutical companies reaped millions and millions of profits on. And I think that caused the goalpost, oh, the vaccine, this mRNA vaccine, it's going to prevent the transmission of COVID. It's going to prevent you from getting it. And others, if you don't get this vaccine, you hate your grandmother. You're going to kill all these people. And you got to do your duty and get it. Well, you know what? My grandmother got it, and she died. I saw her take her last breath.
I'm sorry.
And it's a very profound thing to see someone that you love take their last breath and go on to whatever happens after.
Of course.
So when those seats, and it turns out the 6 feet of social distancing was not based on anything, how can you not expect people to question these higher institutions that are deemed to look out for the well-being of people, and they don't?
First, bodily autonomy. I believe that, and that is the sole principle by which we practice medicine.
Oh my God.
Vaccines fall in a unique category because your decision on vaccinating your child and then sending them to school can impact other children in that school.
Let's pause it. How, though? If those kids are vaccinated, shouldn't matter how you... they just say things. Like, he doesn't follow... Spoiler alert, he doesn't follow this up with anything. He doesn't justify that statement by anything. He says bodily autonomy is our sole driving purpose, right? But vaccines are a little bit different because you're putting other people in danger by not having vaccines. No, you're not. So that's the argument against that. That's just not true. So what is he talking about? What is he talking about? I don't know. We go back to the video, but he says that not taking a vaccine is a danger to other people. I'll say it's not. And you can decide. Are you made dangerous because I'm not vaccinated? Is your child made, put in a dangerous situation because my kid isn't vaccinated? No. Otherwise, the whole concept behind vaccines is faulty. And we have to rethink the whole thing. We'll pick it up on the other side. We have a lot more to talk about, but I want to finish out with these conversations. Because, again, I think it illustrates the mindset of these people who have only even tried to understand one position, and yet they think they know it all.
The eighth coin in the limited edition series is now exclusively available at thealexjonesstore.com. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the eighth in the series. You're Past purchases have kept us on the air. There's only 4,000 of this coin. I designed all the others, but the crew said, hey, people keep asking for an Alex Jones coin. This is the first and probably the only one we'll ever do. InfoWars on the back. Myself, the American flag on the front with my signature. It is vital to keep us on the air. Plus, this is an amazing coin. All the other in the last seven, the last few years we put out, you look at them online, they're selling for way more than we printed them up. But I'm not even pushing it as a collectible coin. It is a fundraiser to keep us on the air. We absolutely need the funds. It is historic, and it costs us about $40 for each coin for the silver and for having it printed or minted in Missouri. And you can get it for $99 if you're not a VIP member at thealexjonesstore.com, for $70-something if you are. People love the coins. It keeps us on air. It's a fundraiser.
You're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
All right, folks, welcome back. Again, I don't know how we break through this mindset, but if you want to identify like what the number one issue that we have, it's the fact that so many of our institutions and industries are populated by people like this doctor. And I'll show you other examples of this exact thing. And maybe some philosopher has written a textbook on this that I just haven't read yet. So I struggle to understand this mindset and what even the difference is. Like, you can have somebody, like, you have two people that are like exactly the same, believe exactly the same stuff, but then they have this one difference, and it's like, it's subtle, it's hard to define. But it's this love of the system, whatever that is, whatever. And, you know, Carl Benjamin and I were talking about this, which is why I you know, was referencing the video of his yesterday in the interview that we did, where there's this indefinable mindset. And one way it's expressed is when people argue legality rather than morality. When you're talking to somebody about what is right and wrong, and they start arguing what is legal and illegal. And I think that in and of itself sort of defines the mindsets of, like, there's one mindset that just sort of has a view, has a perspective, has a principle, and all the laws of the world can change and alter and rise and fall, and some political, you know, machine can be in favor of it, another one against it. But regardless, you're going to have a belief and it's going to stay that way no matter what anybody else says. And then there's another mindset that it's like your morality, your mindset, everything is dictated to you from an outside source, from a system of some sort. And like that, I think that really goes to the heart of like what we're dealing with. And I'll show you other examples of this that I can tie into it. So again, it's not even necessarily about the specifics of what these people are talking about, even though people are making very good points, saying we were sold a bill of goods. Like, you can't deny that. You can't deny that they lied about the vaccine. They sold us a lie. So instead, what they have to argue is that somehow going along with the lie is good because science is about consensus and you're actually hurting other people by not getting vaccinated. I mean, it's just hogwash. It's all total nonsense. But to me, that really goes to the heart of the issue that we're dealing with. So let's go back to this doctor. He just told us that vaccines are different, that he's guided entirely by bodily autonomy, you know, unless it can affect other people, which it can't. I mean, vaccines, again, if you're immune to something, you're immune to it. Doesn't matter if somebody else is not immune to it, that doesn't affect you. So just doesn't make any sense. Just doesn't make any sense what he's saying. Especially, I mean, again, this is where it gets confusing, because if you're talking about vaccines, then it just flat doesn't make any sense. Okay, if you're talking about real vaccines, as was defined before 2020, things like polio, tuberculosis, or whatever else, when you get vaccinated, you're immune to it. And you can, you know, if you're vaccinated against measles, you can go hang out in a measles ward in a hospital and be fine because you're immune to measles. Okay? That's how typical vaccines work. So in that case, saying you're putting somebody else in danger by not being vaccinated is absurd, doesn't make any sense. The reason they started saying that was to cover up the inefficacy of the COVID vaccine. The COVID mRNA jab did not make you immune, so they couldn't say, get this or else you'll get COVID, because it didn't make you immune. So what they were saying was that it stopped transmission, but it didn't even stop transmission. And what it actually did was hide your symptoms, so you'd actually be infected and contagious, but not know it, meaning that it actually allowed it to spread even more. And vaccine or antibody-dependent enhancement you had if you were, you know, not fully vaccinated, not appropriately vaccinated, then you actually were causing transformation in the disease itself and making it more dangerous and able to infect even more people. So if you're talking about normal vaccines, that statement just flat doesn't make any sense. If you're talking about the mRNA vaccine, it makes even less sense. So just want to lay that out for you, because he just says things and then moves on, but they don't make any sense. So bodily autonomy, it's his number one thing. He loves bodily autonomy, but not when it comes to vaccines. Not when it comes to what you're putting into your blood. Not when it comes to reprogramming your very DNA to create spike proteins for an indefinite period of time. In that case, you know, bodily autonomy comes second to collective responsibility. Even though the collective responsibility doesn't even exist because the vaccine doesn't stop transmission. Let's go back to clip number two now.
So much like drinking and driving as an example, your choice to do that puts your life at risk, but it also puts others at risk. So we deem that as dangerous for the general public. This is why vaccines, it becomes a little more complicated when we talk about bodily autonomy. When it comes to our government, our mandates, pharmaceutical companies, there's absolutely reasons for distrust. I love that everyone in this room is a skeptic, and I encourage skepticism. I don't think anyone should just go into a doctor's office and say yes, 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 yes. In fact, I love when my patients question me. I empower them to ask questions. Doctors sometimes get this attitude where they're like, oh, you Googled before coming here? Google search doesn't replace my degree. No. That's not how we're supposed to be. What I get excited about is if you Googled and you have questions, now I know exactly the route I need to take to help you make a decision that's right for you and your family.
I hate this guy. I don't know if I need to explain anything further. It's kind of why I want to show these videos. It's like, I don't know how you can watch this doctor and not come away with just like, that is the slimiest dude I've ever heard. There's just something about him that's so slimy. It's the only word for it. Condescending, you know, obviously is the other word for it. Like, you can just imagine going to this guy and he's like, yeah, it's time for your COVID jab, time for your COVID shot. And you go, well, I already had COVID. I'm naturally immune. He's like, oh, interesting. Oh, I love that you're so curious about this. No, I'm going to empower you to ask questions. Like, you're going to empower me to ask. You don't empower me to do anything, dumbass. I'll ask questions if I feel like it. If you won't answer them, I'll go to a different doctor. I empower my patients to ask questions. And you can just see him sitting, and you know what's running through his mind is like, you freaking idiot, think you Google's better than my medical industry. Because you've heard of how he's answered everything else. He doesn't do research. He hasn't looked into any of these. He doesn't know who Dr. Peter McCullough is. He doesn't know about the vaccine injury. He doesn't know about VAERS. He doesn't know about the spike in deaths reported following the rollout of the COVID-19 vaccine. He hasn't done any research. He listens to only what he's told officially from on high. He thinks because he understands and agrees with that, he's smarter than everybody. And if you disagree, he's like, I love it. I love when my patients Google things and have questions for me, because then we can work together to deal with it. And all he's saying is like, yeah, it, you know, it's a challenge. It's like a fun challenge to me when somebody has, you know, questions. I get to, you know, pander and pontificate to them as if I'm on their side. But really, I know at the end of the day, I'm just going to get him to do what I want. There's something about this guy that's just like, if you're going to be a smarmy, condescending prick, don't try to seem nice. I don't know, man. I've known some prick doctors in the past. They're the best doctors. They really are. And if that's the way that you think, if you're just like, no, you need to get the vaccine, you're not a doctor. I am. I went through all this. You know, I know more than you. You should do what I say. I kind of respect that. I'm kind of like, yeah, all right. You know, you have, you know, what am I going to say? I mean, you can answer these questions, but I don't know. It just goes to the heart of everything that we're dealing with. It's just this pervasive attitude of just the smiling condescension. Just, oh, you ask so many questions. I love that about you. I love that for you. Yeah, that's my favorite, is when little amateurs like you think you know as much as me. I love that. Do you know how much I love when you think your Google search is worth as much as my medical degree, sweetie? I think that's great. Just like, just stop. Just stop being, stop pretending. Stop pretending to be nice. Stop pretending to be stupid. You're a smart jackass. Just, we get it. We understand that. We know that. But that makes you incredibly dangerous in a position of authority where you refuse to acknowledge or even try to empathize with the viewpoint that's contrary to your own. Let's go to the final clip here. Let's go to clip number 3. Again, this doctor being grilled on vaccines.
Vaccine-acquired immunity is better than natural immunity.
As a child, when I got vaccines, I ended up with spinal meningitis. I had chicken pox twice. I almost died. But my 3 children that don't have any vaccines are perfectly fine. They've been traveled over 20 states during COVID. They've never got COVID. They've never got sick. Just a healthy diet, keeping them away from toxic foods, making sure their hygiene is good. Did you know that COVID has a patent and natural illnesses can't have patents? Did you know that every illness dated back to polio has a patent? The only thing that doesn't have a patent is the common cold. Did you know that Fauci funded medical schools to try to make the vaccine more, or not the vaccine, make COVID more deadly? Vaccine immunity is not really a thing because they cannot guarantee it makes anybody immune.
Something I think our healthcare system doesn't do enough is say, I don't know. And I have no idea about Dr. Fauci's patents. I don't know about patents on viruses.
Yeah, you don't know anything, dumbass.
I'm a family medicine physician. That means I work in a clinic where people come in with either an acute complaint, something's going on with them, or they're coming in for a preventive physical where we can get ahead of things and make them healthier by preventing illness. In fact, if you think about where pharma's profits are, if pharma had to choose between preventing an illness or to treat an illness for the rest of someone's life, financially speaking, they probably want to just treat someone for the rest of their life.
Exactly.
But that's not what vaccines are. Vaccines prevent that illness.
As a scientific mind, you're supposed to observe everybody's hypothesis, not just Rockefeller's medical schools. And that's why I feel like you got most of your knowledge from, and maybe you should branch out into holistic medicine, because vaccines have never been the answer. They were created to separate us from spirituality and consciousness. If you look at the ingredients, there's nothing healthy in vaccines. Formaldehyde, all types of stuff. So none of that prevents. There's everybody got vaccines, still get illnesses. I've never seen any prevention of anything.
The prevention from vaccines comes from prevention of death and serious illness.
Oh my God.
And we've seen that when you study that, not just in the U.S. by the Rockefeller system that you describe. One of the largest studies in the world surrounding vaccines and autism in children came from Denmark with over 500,000 children. That is not a U.S. system. That is not a capitalist system. And they found that there is no pattern.
That's not true.
Yeah, it's, again, he addressed nothing of what she said. And he's doing the classic thing where he's like, he's going to tell you to get the vaccine. He's going to tell you to trust the system. He's going to tell you that you shouldn't question it. He has no idea what any of the objections are. Never heard of any of the skeptics. Never heard of any of the, you know, authorities that contradict him. But he's going to tell you that, you know, you need to trust the system. But then when you actually question him about the system, he's going to go, well, I'm just a family doctor. I just deal with acute symptoms. So it's like, okay, so then why do you trust the vaccine system? I don't even know how to like express to people. So I can imagine people who see that guy and are just like, yeah, he's great. Super, super trustworthy. You know, he's very nice when he's talking to people. And it's just like, He's not saying anything. He's not actually making a case for vaccines. He's not actually making any points. He's constantly just like changing the subject or feigning ignorance about what's being said.
This guy is a total pusher, right? If you look at it, if you look at the hairline, okay, on this bro, on this Chad. Okay. He's obviously doing TV rounds, right? He's obviously the get your jab guy.
Of course.
Right.
Yeah, well, and you know, clearly he has done a good job with this because he's got all the answers sort of you know, pre-established. The problem is they don't make any sense and they're not actually answers to anything. He's not actually saying anything. He's not actually making a case. And again, he's the fact that we call the mRNA shot a vaccine just makes the conversation impossible. When he says the point of vaccines is to stop serious illness and death, that was never true about any vaccine before COVID. Nobody said when you got the measles vaccine, you're still going to get measles. It just won't kill you. It's never been a thing. It's never been a thing. At all. Like, what is he even talking about? So it's only a thing with the mRNA vaccine. And it only became a thing with the mRNA vaccine because it doesn't work. Because it's the only non-falsifiable claim you can make. Because it's impossible temporally to have the same infection infect the same person once without a vaccine, once with. You can't say, oh, I would have gotten, like, you can't falsify that claim. You say, yeah, I took the vaccine, then I got COVID, but it would have been worse. Well, there's no way to know whether it would have or not. So they eventually landed on that claim. Because first they claimed it would stop you from getting the virus. Then they claimed it would stop you from transmitting the virus. Eventually, they admit it doesn't stop you from getting it. It doesn't stop you from transmitting it. So they had to say it stops you from dying. Okay, well, it doesn't stop you from dying, but it lowers your chance of dying from the illness. That's all they had left to claim because it's the only thing that you can claim about it that you can't disprove. Because I'm sure if you could study it, that wouldn't even be true. In fact, I know that wouldn't be true from my own personal experience in people that I know who have gotten the vaccine and immediately gotten incredibly bad cases of COVID, worse than I got, and I was never vaccinated. So he's just a mouthpiece. He's just a mouthpiece for the pharmaceutical companies. But again, it's not even about him or the specific arguments he makes. It's about this mindset. Whatever this mindset is. I just put a clip in there. It's called the Supreme Court. It's a debate between two of the candidates in the Minnesota contest for Supreme Court. And again, I think you'll see the thread of continuity here, the same mindset in the woman you're about to see as the doctor that we just watched. It's the rules-based mindset, like the New World Order is the rules-based international order. This is the rules-based mindset where you are operating in the understanding of that somebody else can dictate right or wrong, that a collection of people can establish morality. And if their sentiments change, then morality changes along with it. And again, you see this time and time again. If you're talking about what is wrong or right, people talk about what is legal or illegal. And by the way, it's the same issue I have with people that are justifying the Trump campaign or the Trump administration going after college students who, you know, disagreed with Israel on their social media. And the same thing that happened with the January Sixers, where you go, hey, it's wrong when some dude from Kansas high-fives the cop on his way into the Capitol building to throw that guy in prison for 10 years. And the response you get to that was like, well, they had a trial. Well, they did technically violate. They were charged with a crime, and then they were tried, and they pled guilty, so therefore, and it's like, no, but it's still wrong. It's, I don't care if they went through the system. It's still wrong. I don't care if the law technically allows for this to be done. It's wrong, and it shouldn't be allowed to happen. Same thing with the people being kicked out of the country. It's like, well, but technically, you know, we're allowed to withdraw visas for any reason. It's like, okay, it's still wrong. Don't give me the technically. Don't tell me the rules-based understanding of what's right and wrong here. Here's the Supreme Court debate in Minnesota, where one person's operating on a basis of morality. The other one has a rules-based mindset. Let's watch.
A man who sexually assaulted a 5-year-old child repeatedly. She had to testify at trial.
Wisconsin, the jury sorry, not Minnesota.
My opponent still refused to revoke bond, the $500 signature bond she released him on. She let him live near us across the street from an elementary school. She didn't change any of that after he was convicted. And then at sentencing time, in spite of the pleas of the victim, she ultimately gave that offender a sentence that resulted in him being in prison for less than 2 years after that sentencing date. This is a dangerous flaw in my opponent's judgment, and that's just one example of many.
I'll stand by the cases. They have focused between him and Elon Musk. They have focused on two cases out of thousands that I've handled.
I'll stand by the cases. In 2020, you did sentence a child sex offender to 4 years in prison after prosecutors requested 10. Do you regret that sentence?
Yes. I don't regret that sentence because I followed the law in that case, as I always do. I applied the law, which says that judges have to consider every relevant factor in sentencing. You have to consider both the aggravating and mitigating factors, and the Supreme Court has said you have to order the minimum amount of prison time you believe is necessary to protect the public. That's what I did in that case and every other case, and my goal is always to keep the community safe.
I did what the law obliged me to do, and it's like, okay, so you gave them the bare minimum. So really what you're saying is that the law stopped you from giving him even less time. You had the discretion to give him a much, much longer sentence. It's what the victim wanted. It's what the prosecutors wanted. It would have made the community safer, and you chose not to. But you can hide behind the fact that technically you didn't break the law. Technically, you still gave him the minimum amount required by law because you legally could not give him less. And again, this doctor is like, my number one thing is bodily autonomy, but not in questions of health, right? My number one thing is keeping the public safe, but I will release rapists with bare minimum sentencing. Okay, so there is no objective truth, but your subjective view can be wrong. Nothing that these people say makes any sense.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you can see, everything we broke down over the years has turned out to be dead on. Most of the time when we were a little bit off, it was because things were much worse than we were saying. But in the main, we've been dead on. That's our mission, be the most accurate out there. MSM's mission is to deceive you, lie to you because they're mercenaries for the globalists. And we're funded by viewers and listeners like you. So we try to bring you products that really work, that you're going to love, so you come back and get them again and again. So many of you are going to be excited to hear that our ultimate turmeric formula is back in stock. The Shilajit is the best quality. The Irish Sea Moss is available as well. You're going to want to reorder it. But for viewers that haven't ever gotten the products and haven't experienced them, you are missing out. If our information is game-changing and one of a kind, imagine what the products are like. Go now to TheAlexShowStore.com. There's not just great supplements, the widest selection of Patriot apparel, and more at TheAlexShowStore.com, powering the American resistance to globalists worldwide and winning. Methylene blue is all the rage. But for my listeners, we've been talking about it for decades. But finally, they've got factories They've got laboratories that are producing medical, pharmaceutical, USP grade. And so, our sponsor, thealexjonesstore.com, has it right now. The very highest quality. And I've taken USP grade before, and they claim it's USP grade. It works great. Massive energy, clarity, focus, no letdown. This is 10 times better. I'm actually scared of this. So I've seen Robert F. Kennedy Jr., you know, take three droppers on Air Force One. I took half a dropper, and I'm bouncing off the walls hours later. Ladies and gentlemen, we have the very best methylene blue I've ever had at the lowest price, and it funds the InfoWar, a total 360 win. So get your ultra, and it is ultra, methylene blue right now at thealexjonesstore.com.
Here's where all eyes now are on gold and silver. Because gold went over $3,000 an ounce, it's at an all-time high. That's a very strong technical and psychological threshold number, that 3,000. So now that the world is looking at gold, the world is also going to be looking at silver. So even the massive growth that we've already seen, I'm guessing it's just the beginning.
Gut level, where do you think gold is in a month?
3,100 in a month, like in the next 3 to 4 weeks. And then I think it gets to 3,200 by the beginning of the summer. And we could literally see 4,000 as momentum starts to gather and as the eyes of the world get on it. And then silver, you know, probably 50 to 75.
People need to call you, do a free consultation, leave your name and number, 720-605-3900, kpm.com/gold. Do the form. They'll call you back. They'll do a free consultation. They can roll over your IRAs, 401ks. Do it now, folks. Dr. Kirk Elliott, thank you so much.
My pleasure. See ya.
It's good to be right, isn't it? Wow. Anybody who's halfway informed about health and vitality knows that turmeric is one of the top super nutrients in the world. But concentrated turmeric is what you want. Most turmeric pills are 4%. That's raw. This is the strongest 95% curcuminoid with a bunch of other concentrated super nutrients like ginger and black pepper dye. And it's finally back in stock. Ultimate turmeric gummies at thealexjonesstore.com. Just go see what Robert F. Kennedy Jr. says about turmeric. And this stuff is the Godzilla of turmeric. And it funds the InfoWar. And while you're at thealexjonesstore.com, be sure to check out the widest selection anywhere of Patriot 1776 Part 2. Incredible clothing, ball caps, t-shirts, hoodies. It's all there, like this baby, the Second American Revolution, at thealexjonesstore.com. And you're funding the tip of the spear in the Second American Revolution when you support us. So I thank and salute you all. Now take action at thealexjonesstore.com.
InfoWars.com is tomorrow's news today.
You're tuned in to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
All right, welcome back, folks. This is The American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. I'm going to go ahead and give out the phone number now, taking your phone calls the second half of this show. The number to dial is 1-877-789-2539, 1-877-789-2539. We will go to your calls just as soon as they come in. I'm still trying to figure out what the deal is with RFK and poppers. I keep seeing headlines. A doctor was like, RFK thinks poppers cause AIDS, and I keep seeing headlines that say that, but then the only clip I've seen is Kennedy like giving a speech, and he mentions that the first 1,000 people to die of AIDS were all addicted to poppers and basically living this drug-addled life of constant degenerate sex. Heavy recreational drug use in gay men and drug addicts was the real cause of immune deficiency amongst AIDS victims in the 1980s and 90s. He never found any evidence HIV actually kills a T-cell, asserting that connection between HIV and AIDS was itself the product of a medical conspiracy with former NIAID director Anthony Fauci at its head. 100% of the people who died, the first 1,000 who had AIDS, were people who were addicted to poppers. Kennedy falsely told an audience of supporters in a video posted by the watchdog social media account Patriot Takes in 2023. There were people that were part of a gay lifestyle where they were burning the candle at both ends, and there were poppers on sale everywhere at gay bars. So it's not him actually saying poppers cause AIDS. So there's that, I guess. There's that. again, it's just the supreme irony of the doctor countering misinformation himself, spewing misinformation. Not exactly surprising, but annoying. But also annoying. All right, we got some more. I got some more videos to show you and other stories to get into as the phone lines fill up. Let's go to clip number. Let's go to clip number six now, because this is again about Doge and Elon Musk and the attempt to clean up the federal government and the just shocking numbers that have been coming out. Let's watch.
Talking about this,
we were with Elon just now. An incredible stat. He said, "I'm not going to name the firm so that I don't want to," but he said this one organization gets 98% of their revenue.
It was in the newspaper, so we can say it. It's Booz Allen.
Exactly. So we were talking about this, and then we were going through the numbers on the other firms, and it's just the whole thing.
It's
is
shocking.
Incredible.
What kind of risk management is that, by the way?
Yeah.
Right.
But it tells you that they didn't manage the risk.
That's right.
Tells you how entrenched they believe they were.
And how good it is for them.
And how good it is.
You're absolutely right.
And the way the grift works, you can only have 6-month contracts, but there are people who have had 46-month contracts.
Incredible.
Like they've been in situ for 20 years.
Incredible.
Of course, that's Booz Allen Hamilton. I mean, it's the same with the Rand Corporation. It's the same with Lockheed Martin. I mean, these are pseudo-governmental agencies. They're private companies, but all of their contracts come directly from the government. And the beautiful thing about that is that they get to write the reports that compel the government to buy their products. So it's very convenient. They get to write the reports that say, how important it is, how vital it is for national security interests that we buy a million more Tomahawk missiles from them. So yeah, it's very convenient, and these companies are hand in glove with the government, which wouldn't even be that bad of a thing, except when you understand that the people that run these companies are billionaires, and the people that work in these companies are multi-millionaires, and all of that money is coming from taxpayer dollars being funneled into them, with very little oversight or control or justification for any of the money being spent. And most of it goes towards fabricating reasons for these organizations to exist, creating the wars that facilitate the commercial activity of these corporations. Let's go to another video here, clip number five. This is Megyn Kelly responding to the continual stream of, Democrats just have this thing where they can take one accusation, even like unproven accusation, and they just run with it. It just gets brought up every single time a person is talked about. And you'll see Megyn Kelly makes this point, actually, the way that, if it's a Democrat who gets in trouble, just gets washed away, not even talked about. Nobody's concerned about it. But when it's Trump, even the most flimsy and illegitimate accusation will dog him the rest of his life, even though it's just completely fraudulent and totally unsubstantiated. Megyn Kelly makes a bunch of good points about journalism and bias in this country. Let's watch.
I just want to understand something clearly. Donald Trump was found liable for sexual abuse in a civil court. He's been accused by many women. You don't believe any of that?
I think the most serious thing I've heard about him has been the E. Jean Carroll allegation that he sexually assaulted her in a Bergdorf dressing room. And I don't believe one word of that.
There are other women who have said.
Oh, I know. I've interviewed some of them. But look, the things I heard included things like he got handsy on an airplane. Now, I don't know whether that happened or it didn't, but do I find that a deal breaker for a possible politician? Not really. At least I reported on their stories and did them the courtesy of bringing them to air in front of millions of people and let the audience make up its mind. My problem is more with these Democrats who will bury these allegations against their candidates or their candidate spouses and then play holier than thou when they're looking at Donald Trump.
Do you see yourself as a journalist still? Or would you not describe yourself
no,
like
I'm
that
still
anymore?
A journalist. I mean, I break news all the time. And when I sit with Trump or anybody else in the administration, I ask tough questions. I mean, as recently as September of 23, I interviewed Trump and he got so mad at me. He didn't talk to me for 6 or 7 months. So it's not, look, it's a tough job to do. You have to be able to hit the people you admire. And I do. You know, I've hit them all. Right before the election, I ripped on Trump's Madison Square Garden rally as too brotastic and got specific about why. You have to understand, like, if you haven't sold your soul, you have to be willing to criticize the people, even you, that you admire on your, quote, side. And my owning my bias by going out there on stage with Donald Trump and saying, I'm voting for him and you should too, is a bonus when it comes to my credibility. Now, everybody has zero doubt about where I stand, and they can filter everything I say through the appropriate lens. What typically happens in journalism is they say they have no bias, and then they just work it out in the printed word or on their shows without owning it. But the audience knows it, and it creates a distrust and a divide. When it comes to Trump and me, no. I my own personal opinion is most of the allegations against him are much more complicated than the mainstream media would have you believe. And I don't think Donald Trump is a rapist or a sexual assaulter. I do think he's taken inappropriate liberties with women and gotten handsy with them in a way he's owned himself. Okay. Years ago when he was a celebrity, and it is what it is. That's the past. It's just about so much more than that. We are talking about how many people dying at the southern border because of the invasion that we've suffered under Joe Biden. We're talking about Laken Riley, whose killer was let in under Biden. We put him on a taxpayer flight down to Georgia where he murdered her. I don't give a shit about Trump getting handsy with somebody 20 years ago. I want someone who will close the border, which he has. I want someone who will keep boys out of my daughter's sports, which he has. I want someone who will stand up to the insane DEI policies so that white kids will stop hearing in school that they're born with some original sin from which they cannot recover, which he has.
So yeah, absolutely brilliantly put by Megyn Kelly. And you know, it's just this thing. I don't even know. There's another story along similar lines, but the headline from Washington Post. Judge clarifies, yes, Trump was found to have raped E. Jean Carroll. And of course, they bring this up constantly. A judge can't just declare that. That's not how any of this works. It's not true just because a judge says it's true. The way this is supposed to work, you're supposed to be accused, and then you're supposed to be able to mount a defense, and a jury is supposed to consider all the evidence. In this case, a judge has just asserted that he raped E. Jean Carroll. They just start with that as an assumption, never been proven, accusation was never, allowed to be confronted in court, never had to be proven, they didn't put any evidence forward to prove that. No witnesses were questioned. No statements were taken. A judge just asserted that legally he's a rapist. And it's just like, that is the way they establish truth in the rules-based mindset, right? A judge said it, therefore it is true. It's just like, so our whole system of jurisprudence, the whole process by which we have established as a civilization, the way we get to the truth just doesn't matter because a judge asserted it. A judge said something, so therefore, it's true and you're not allowed to contradict it. It's just, again, it's the arbitrary nature of all of this. Where they don't have to prove it. They don't have to give you a chance to respond. They don't have to litigate this in open court. They just get to assert things, and then it's taken as gospel truth. It's absurd. It's ridiculous. And it's frankly outrageous. And when it comes to discussion of judges, I'll read this story, and then we'll go out to phone calls. But even the last, 24 hours, judges have put a temporary, or they've blocked Trump's revision, his removal of the temporary protected status of Venezuelan migrants. Something has to break here. This is not the way our government is supposed to work. This is a constitutional crisis that we're in right now. And the constitutional crisis is that the judiciary branch is usurping power from the executive branch. That the executive branch, elected by the people, has certain obligations and functions that is not being allowed to perform. The president, our system was not designed so that the president had to have unanimous approval from 700 judges throughout the country. The president's discretion, the choices he makes, are not all 100% subject to interference by any of these 700 judges, many of which, as we've laid out, are literal just Democratic activist appointees. They were never judges. They'd never been judges before. Somehow, because they volunteered, they worked for a leftist NGO for 20 years, then get put on a judge's bench. Now they get veto authority over everything the executive branch does. It's not the way it works. But the other thing you have to understand is judges do not have the capability to autonomously interfere in these things. What's happening behind the scenes is that these leftist organizations are using government taxpayer dollars, right? Like the leftovers from the USAID, NGOs. So they have like entire law firms on the books, just dozens of lawyers, and they have pre-prepared objections to whatever they think Trump is doing. And the moment Trump issues an executive order, they go and file with the judge. They know who the judge is. They know that they're friendly and will make their decision. Like they're coordinating behind the scenes and going, okay, when Trump tries to get rid of temporary protected status, I've got a Venezuelan here. I'm going to say I represent him. This is like the SPLC, right? Or whoever is the ACLU, the SPLC, whatever these organizations are that are launching these lawsuits. So they launch a lawsuit and they say, we need an emergency injunction. So because until we decide the answer to this question, you know, our client can't be deported. And so the judge works with them, cooperates with them, and all this is pre-staged, right? And then they go through the motions once it happens. But the judge can't independently do it. It's because of this gigantic network of leftist NGOs that are working together to file these things with friendly judges that they know will issue an injunction on their behalf. So it's beyond just the judges, but the executive branch somehow they have the right to grant temporary protected status, but not take it away. Somehow the executive branch of this country has the ability to, without question or interference or objection, import millions of people from other countries, house them in this country, give them IDs and social security numbers and benefits. But that same executive branch doesn't have the right to reverse that process and send them out of the country. That's not the way this is supposed to work. And honestly, at this point, Trump just needs to say the Supreme Court is the only one who can interfere. Supreme Court's the only one. I don't care if Boasberg, I don't care if Chutkin doesn't like what I'm doing. These people have no right to discount the votes that 80 plus million Americans cast for Donald Trump. That's all that's happening here. They're undermining the entire process of the American government. They're interfering with things they have absolutely no right to interfere with, and they are robbing us of our voice by doing that. If the people we vote for can't put in the policies that we voted for because some judge that nobody voted for is blocking it, this is a problem. This is an issue. And even just the amount of resources and energy that will be wasted just trying to like litigate this stuff in court. The Supreme Court should be the only ones that get to interfere with the executive branch. No action should be taken by the executive branch in response to the judiciary until it gets to the Supreme Court. And even then, I think it should be treated as a suggestion. And there were like three things. I can't even think of them right now, but like, it's just, you know, last night. It's like, actually, a judge says you can't end protective status for Venezuelans, and you can't stop giving away money, and you can't fire people that work for you. Everything Trump does has to be approved by unanimous consent by 700 judges all over the United States, most of which were leftist activists, are leftist activists. But it goes beyond that. From Daniel Huff in the Wall Street Journal, why Judge Boasberg's deportation order is legally invalid. He failed to impose a bond on plaintiffs as the law requires. Other injunctions have the same deficiency. The Trump administration is locked in a standoff with Judge James Boasberg over the deportation flights under the Alien Enemies Act. Officials could face contempt proceedings, and the president and his supporters have called for the judge's impeachment. Yet the administration seems to be overlooking a critical legal tool, injunction bonds. The argument is rock solid. Under Rule 65C of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, a party seeking an injunction needs to put up a bond to cover its costs. These bonds aren't optional. They're mandatory unless the government is seeking an injunction. That means Judge Boasberg's order and dozens like it may not be valid at all. Because, again, they have to be, these cases have to be put forward by a plaintiff. The plaintiff in most of these cases is like the ACLU or the SPLC or some other, you know, legal group acting with government money. So they have to put forward the money to pay for the bond, but they're not. They haven't. President Trump identified this legal off-ramp in a March 11 memorandum directing the Justice Department to demand bonds in future injunction cases. Senate Judiciary Chairman Chuck Grassley echoed the call, but the Justice Department hasn't pressed the issue either in Judge Boasberg's courtroom or other high-stakes cases in which activist judges have blocked major policies without requiring plaintiffs to put a single dollar at risk. In Judge Boasberg's case, because no bond was required, the temporary restraining order never took legal effect, meaning any alleged government noncompliance is by definition not a violation. The same legal flaw undercuts more than 30 other injunctions issued against Trump administration policies without meaningful bond. Far from a technicality, this is a fundamental failure to follow Rule 65C. So again, if we want to live in a world where everything is being hamstrung and you know, every choice Trump tries to implement is blocked under some obscure legalistic malfeasance or interference or, you know, provision that means that they're allowed to come in and interfere, then they got to play the whole game. If they're going to use the rule set to their advantage, then they have to fulfill all of the obligations that the rule set puts forward. And none of them have. None of them have so far. So the crew can bring up that article, find an uncensored version here, but they have it available. Far from technicality, this is a fundamental failure to follow Rule 65C. The text, legislative history, and appellate court precedent, including from Judge Ruth Bader Ginsburg of the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia, all confirm that a bond isn't optional. It's a legal precondition for an injunction to be valid. The Fourth Circuit has made clear that the bond rule is not discretionary. Only the government may obtain an injunction without posting a bond. Quote, there are no other exceptions. The Third Circuit has characterized the bond as a condition precedent to issuing injunctive relief. According to the Fourth Circuit, failure to acquire a bond before granting preliminary injunctive release is reversible error. These precedents faithfully reflect the plain text rule of 65C, which permits courts to issue injunctions or temporary restraining orders only if the plaintiffs post bond. They uphold Congress's unanimous, unambiguous intent in 1914 when it repealed the discretionary language of the 1911 Judiciary Code and replaced it with a mandatory bond requirement. Yet, activist judges continue to sidestep the rule by setting nominal or de minimis bonds. Courts have some discretion in setting the amount, but it must be, quote, proper to pay the costs and damages sustained by any party found to have been wrongfully enjoined. In practice, the cost is rarely zero, and appellate courts have repeatedly struck down attempts to treat it as such. In National Kidney Patient Association v. Sullivan, 1992, a district judge enjoined the government from lowering reimbursement rates for dialysis service, but required only a $1,000 bond. The D.C. Circuit remanded the case, ordering the district court to set an appropriate bond, citing the more than $18 million already paid out by Medicare under the injunction. Similarly, in the Maryland Department of Human Resources versus USDA 1992, the Fourth Circuit vacated an injunction that exposed the federal food stamp program to significant losses because no bond had been required. That should have been a warning shot. Yet in an egregious case this month, Maryland versus USDA, a district judge ordered the Trump administration to rehire 25,000 federal fired federal probationary employees at a minimum of cost of $45 million a month while setting the bond at $100 for each plaintiff. The judge offered three-week justifications. First, he admitted the government faced financial harm but claimed it was too complex to calculate. It's too complex. Nah, it's just too difficult to understand. So I'll just say $100. The damage during an expedited hearing, but that's precisely the scenario Rule 65 was designed to address. Bonds are the safeguard against costly errors in fast-moving litigation. Second, the judge cited Hosh something versus Nanya Plastics, 1999, a Fourth Circuit case he claimed supported nominal bonds. In reality, Hosh said the opposite, that the bond rule is, quote, mandatory and unambiguous, and the amount should reflect the gravity of the potential harm. The opinion references nominal bonds only in passing and only in cases where the risk of harm is remote. Finally, the judge invoked the familiar refuge of activist courts, a made-up and subjective public interest exception. This elitist conceit presumes that it is in the public interest to exempt activists from standard rule legal rules so they can block actions ordered by the president, for whom 77 million Americans voted. This exception does not hold water. The D.C. District Court case, a district judge tried to invoke public interest to waive the bond. The appellate panel, which included future Justice Ginsburg, rejected that outright, saying this completely overlooks the key purpose of a bond to make plaintiffs consider the damage they may inflict by pressing ahead with a possibly losing claim. So again, this matters a lot because you have these NGO organizations like the SPLC and ACLU, and they have no limiting factor in the number or the size of the cases they can bring. If instead they were forced to actually contend with the amount of money that they're forcing the government to pay by filing these, they would be severely limited in both the number of cases they can file and the size of the cases that they could file. So by ignoring these injunction bonds, they're allowing the left wing to run rampant and totally destroy Trump's potential in a second presidency. That's the end.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ultimate CMOS has been by far and away our best-selling product on the AlexJonesStore.com when we launched it some months ago. Now, we've had a hard time keeping the gummies in stock, so we formulated the capsules while we wait on more gummies to come in. Now, Irish CMOS is something that's known to be incredible for your body because of the natural iodine that exists in it. It's not just any iodine. It's also abundantly bioavailable. Now, if you don't know, iodine is incredible for your health and supports your body's ability to detoxify itself. Check out Ultimate CMOS capsules right now at the AlexJonesStore.com. Not only are you fighting for your health, your immunity, and your body's ability to detoxify itself, but you're fighting for humanity as well by keeping Alex Jones on the air, InfoWars on the air, and this crew operating to broadcast the truth worldwide wherever it is being censored, just like your body is under relentless assault and needs Ultimate CMOS capsules in order to fight off all the toxins that you're met with. So is InfoWars under assault and needs the audience. So go to the AlexJonesStore.com right now and subscribe for Ultimate CMOS capsules every month. Ladies and gentlemen, Ultimate Iron Plus with Vitamin C Gummies are back in stock at the AlexJonesStore.com. Now, we know it's that time of the year where everybody's getting sick. We've got the CDC and the WHO coming out and warning of the bird flu. We've got this virus that's breaking out in China right now, and we know that the government and the deep state are gearing up for the next pandemic. Even Hotez has come out and said that there's a litany of viruses that are going to be launched across the globe as soon as Donald Trump is president of the United States again. So fight back by fighting for your health and not giving in to the vaccine mandates which they have in store for us. Please check out Ultimate Iron Plus with Vitamin C Gummies right now at the AlexJonesStore.com. It's rich in immune-boosting Vitamin C Plus. It's rich in immune-boosting Vitamin C, supports healthy iron levels, promotes cellular health, and supports blood oxygen levels while being GMO and gluten-free. So check out Ultimate Iron Plus with Vitamin C right now at the AlexJonesStore.com.
InfoWars.com is tomorrow's news today.
All right, folks. We are going to go out to your phone calls this hour. And we're going to hit the ground running in the next segment, but I just received this, just dropped from Project Veritas, and I want to go to it. And it ties into everything that we're talking about here, the rules-based mindset that we're contending with. Because there is the spirit of the law and the letter of the law. And the spirit of the law, as it's now been put forward by the Trump administration, is that there should not be discrimination in hiring. It doesn't matter if you call it DEI or CRT or affirmative action. The fact is that people are being discriminated against because of their immutable characteristics. That's anathema, a violation of the fundamental belief of American meritocracy. And so it should end. What these people hear is, oh, DEI is ending. Let's call it DIE and keep going. Because it's not about adhering to the spirit of the law. It's about finding a workaround by manipulating the letter of the law. So this is from Project Veritas. Washington wordsmiths, NASA and State Department employees rebrand DEI to defy Trump's orders. Let's watch.
So it has to go away from you now, DEI stuff?
The same thing happened the last time, because I was already working on it when Trump was president last time. They, like, canceled DEI and stuff, but people just, like, did it and called it something else. Just work around the rules.
Now we have to be careful with, like, writing proposals with terms like climate change or whatever. Well, they don't like that term. They don't believe that. And they're probably not on any of that. We can change the term climate change by natural hazards or, you know, something like that. But, yeah.
Is that what you had to do, like, the first time you was in that office?
Yeah, that's pretty much what it
is. Still able to get funding, right?
Yeah.
Was it DEI? How well was it working?
Well, some people lose their jobs because government folks were hired exclusively to run the DEI program.
President Trump's deadline for federal offices to end their diversity, equity, and inclusion programs is fast approaching.
DEI is seemingly dead.
On Tuesday, President Donald Trump signed a series of executive orders eliminating diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI, government programs.
Already today we've got emails like, all DEI stuff is canceled at the State Department. So, well, I mean, it doesn't really affect my job, but it's for people who are working in those positions. I don't really know what they're going to do.
So that has to go away from you now, DEI stuff?
Unclear. Like, I mean, so the same thing happened the last time, because I was already working on Trump was president last time and in a different agency.
Oh.
And they, like, canceled DEI and stuff, but people just, like, did it and called it something else.
Really?
Yeah.
So genius.
I mean, yeah, just that's work genius. Around the rules.
So what did they do instead?
So basically just, like, calling it, like, multicultural activities instead of, like, diversity and inclusion. Just like, change the word, but it means something.
That is genius.
Yeah.
So is that what they're going to do this time?
Or, like, team building or something like that. Probably that's what they're doing. We'll see how strict they're going to be about it.
It's genius. People just end up calling it something different. Yeah. And it's just the same thing.
Exactly.
It's been a little hard, but the new administration, they're like, you know, they're lots of new executive orders to, like, change rules and stuff. So, like, now we have to be careful with, like, writing proposals with terms like climate change or whatever. Why? Because they don't like that term. They don't believe that. They're probably not fund any of that. So
they're not going to fund any of this?
No. We can change the term climate change by natural hazards or, you know, something like that. But, yeah.
Is that what you had to do, like, the first time?
Yeah, so, again, you know, this is the rules-based mindset that we're dealing with. Yeah, they want to get rid of DEI, so we'll just call it something else. Wow, genius. Wow, you're so smart. Wow, you're so smart. I mean, you just blatantly lie. Is that smart? Is that clever? Yeah, all these people need to be fired. So fire them. All these people should be fired, and we shouldn't be funding any of the crap they do.
The eighth coin in the limited edition series is now exclusively available at thealexjonesstore.com. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the eighth in the series. You're Past purchases have kept us on the air. There's only 4,000 of this coin. I designed all the others, but the crew said, hey, people keep asking for an Alex Jones coin. This is the first and probably the only one we'll ever do. InfoWars on the back. Myself, the American flag on the front with my signature. It is vital to keep us on the air. Plus, it's an amazing coin. All the other in the last seven, the last few years we put out, you look at them online, they're selling for way more than we printed them up. But I'm not even pushing it as a collectible coin. It is a fundraiser. Keeps on the air. We absolutely need the funds. It is historic, and it costs us about $40 for each coin, for the silver and for having it printed or minted in Missouri. And you can get it for $99 if you're not a VIP member at thealexjonesstore.com, or $70-something if you are. People love the coins. It keeps us on air. It's a fundraiser.
You're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
All right, welcome back, folks. We'll go out to your phone calls. Although on the note of DEI, this is what it looks like. My son has been rejected from all but one school. I'm shocked at how competitive college admissions have become. This is from a Reddit called Applying to College. And even just that sentence, it's like the boomer mindset comes through. I'm shocked how competitive college admissions have become. College admissions haven't become competitive. Your son's being discriminated against because he's the wrong race. Wow, these college applications is just so competitive. No, you're being deliberately excluded from the possibility of going to college because your country is run by people who hate you because of your race. Just want to make that clear before we even get into it. It says, my eldest son has been rejected by every college he applied to except for our flagship state school, UMass Amherst. He is the singular brightest, most self-motivated, and hardest working person I know. He's the valedictorian of 476 students. He scored 5 on 18 AP exams and scored 1580 on his SAT, which I think means he missed one question in all the SAT. He created an online gaming website to target elementary and middle school students with 180,000 users per month, earning $3,000 last year through ad revenue. He conducted research for 3 summers under a professor at Boston University and was the first author of 2 papers. He worked weekends at a grocery store for 2 years and worked a paid internship at a local tech company. He's the president of the computer science club and the vice president of the math team. He took 11 dual enrollment classes that college juniors and seniors normally take, getting all A's. He qualified for AIME 2 times. He's a Davidson Young Scholar, an organization for students with IQ scores of 145 and above. I would like to stress that he's nearly all self-motivated. He's not a robot kid who does what their parents tells him to. He wants to do computer science and work in tech, which I don't know the first thing about. Yeah, well, what an idiot. Your son's an idiot. He could have been playing video games and smoking weed and gotten the same outcome, because that's the world that's being set up. The world that's being set up on purpose by design is discriminating specifically against white and Asian people. The person in this case is like a quarter Asian, I guess, but 3/4 white, 1/4 Korean lineage. And, it doesn't matter how well you do. You're going to be discriminated against instead of your son, who works his ass off 24/7, who is dedicated and self-motivated into being a functional, prosperous, responsible member of society, is going to be not chosen because, you know, some inner city black kid with a SAT score of 1250 is going to get his spot instead, because it's not about what's best for the individual student or what's best for society at large. It's about discriminating against and disadvantaging white people. OK, there's no, you know, motivation behind this that is good. It's just pure discrimination, hatred, invasion, soft genocide. That's all that's happening here. It's not good for anybody to have a kid like this resign to some, you know, lower level school. In all likelihood, I mean, we know that the discrimination is not going to stop with where he's going to college. He's also not going to be hired because of the race and sex that he is. I mean, in all likelihood, this kid is going to be like a, he's going to drop out. He's going to realize that all of the effort that he put in is wasted, that no matter how good he is or how successful he is, he will be despised by the people in power and prevented from actually achieving anything. And he'll probably just give up and become one of the millions upon millions of flameouts in this country, young men my age and younger, with incredible potential, incredible capabilities, could help to contribute to an incredible country and you know, provide so much of what's needed economically. And instead, they'll play video games and they'll smoke weed forever. And that's the world that's being set up on purpose, by design. And it's almost like sad. I mean, it is sad seeing this dad who's like obviously so proud of his son. He's just like, man, my son is, he's doing everything right. He's going to be set up for greatness. Can't wait to see what he achieves. Probably go to Princeton or Harvard. He'll be rubbing elbows with the richest, most powerful people in the world. He'll get to, you know, get to be an important politician or industry leader. You know, in 50 years, he'll have some mansion in Telluride, and he'll be hanging out with NASA engineers. And it's like, no. Your kid's going to go to state school where he'll be discriminated against and despised. And then he'll apply for jobs, and he'll get outdone by some Indian, you know, H-1B with a fake diploma from a university that's actually a car shop. And they don't even realize it. And they don't even realize it. That's what I mean when this guy's like, wow, college admissions is really competitive. It's like, do you think there are other people out there like your son? Do you really think there are so many kids out there that are just getting perfect SAT scores, all A's in advanced classes, going out of their way to take, you know, extra credit and all these sorts of things, volunteering and being the president of every club in the school? And this teacher's like, wow, I didn't realize that that wasn't enough to get into Harvard. It's like, no, it'll never be enough. Now, the kid you just laid out is the perfect candidate for literally any school anywhere in the world. If they cared about achievement, if they cared about excellence, if they cared about merit or contributing to society, your son would be the first person they would choose. They don't care about any of that stuff. They really don't. They care about it is disadvantaging white and Asian people to bring about some sort of utopian equity amongst the races. And so the world is being set up. If you're an overachiever, you're an idiot. That sucks. That shouldn't be the case. That shouldn't be how it is. And you'd like to live in a world where a kid like this, you'd encourage, hey, you know, keep it up, kid. You're going to do great things. It's like, no, you're white. You're white, so you're going to be discriminated against. That's just how it is. All right? More so ever than ever happened in America under Jim Crow or anything else. Even then, you had, you know, the exceptionally achieving black people would go to university. They'd go to white universities, or they had their own black universities that they could go to. But it just wouldn't make any sense, and it doesn't make any sense to have a world where these incredibly high achievers are just wasted, literally tens of millions of them. So anyway, he goes on and on. It goes on and on. I find this deeply concerning. I'm also deeply concerned for my son. From when he tells me tech is not at all like finance, that he'll be able to get interviews at top tech companies despite going to UMass Amherst. Still, he's very upset, and I don't know what to tell him. I think he and the people around him attach an undue amount of weight to superficial prestige. I told him this, and he knows it's true, but he's still incredibly upset. Like, dude, stop being such a boomer. Stop being such a boomer. No, it matters where you go to school. It matters that your son is, instead of being surrounded by people as smart or smarter than him and driving him to do greater things and give him access to resources and networks that will maximize his achievement possibility. Instead, he's going to be around a bunch of people who coasted through high school with C's, are going to their state school, only care about getting drunk. He's going to be totally demoralized. He's going to feel it's going to feel totally hopeless. He's going to breeze through all of his classes and not be challenged and not you know, be motivated to achieve greater because he's going to achieve better than anybody else around him without even trying. So he's probably going to get, I mean, I'm just saying, we can bookmark this in 10 years. I can almost guarantee you this kid's son is going to be really good at Rocket League and have spent $30,000 on weed. That's because I've seen this over and over again. I've seen this with people. And it's designed like that. It's on purpose. It's all part of our destruction. And it's all working incredibly well. With that, we got to phone calls. Corn Pop in Maine. Corn Pop in Maine on line number 10. You've been up to quite a bit of activism. Tell us what's going on there in your northern state, sir.
Hey, how's it going, Harrison?
Good, thank you.
Hey, yeah, so me and a few others have been pretty involved in the whole trying to get the boys out of a young girl sport. Seeing our governor and the Maine Principal Association just seems to ignore Trump's executive orders. And so right now, I don't know if the InfoWarriors are familiar. About a month and a half ago, we had two young ladies that were supposed to try for first, but their state championship was robbed from them by a young boy that competed the following year as a boy, placed eighth, and said, you know what? I'm going to be a young lady. And competed and won first place. So what we did is we actually turned around and went and made the plaques and medals that they would have won with their name on it, their school's name on it, calling them the state champions that they are. I also started a campaign where I will be making awards for any young lady that I can get their contact information and what school they're going to send them the award that they are that they deserve. You know, these young ladies, it's not like you wake up one morning and become a state champion and decide you're going to do that. That takes work. That takes effort. These young ladies have been working their entire life for this and for them to be robbed because our governor and what a lot of people from that are not in the state of Maine don't realize is the Maine Principal Association is a group that is actually in charge of all the high school and middle school and all that sports here in Maine. They're the ones who are coming out and defying against President Trump's executive order because they claim that they don't receive federal funding. And the principal at the high school here locally in Augusta is also the president of the Maine Principal Association. And the last couple of school boards I've been going to, I've been calling her out and stuff like that. Well, I found out information that the way to get rid of the principal at your school, I don't know how it is anywhere else, but here in Maine, is all you need to do is get the school board to bring it to a vote. So I started a petition, and I'm door knocking in Augusta, getting Augusta resident to sign this petition to bring to the next school board meeting. And I'm going to not only bring this petition, but I'm also going to highlight in different colors because when you run for a school board, the entire city doesn't vote for each person. So it breaks down by ward. Well, so you got Ward 1, Ward 2, Ward 3.
And I know you've been, you know, a big part of the activism that's been going on there, holding protests and stuff. I have a few stories about it just to give people some context as to exactly what you're talking about. We've got this story here. Maine officials won't comply with the Trump administration's trans athlete ban. The administration said earlier this month that the Maine Department of Education, Maine Principals Association, and a high school are each in violation of Title IX because of participation of trans athletes. School officials in Maine said Thursday they will not comply with a proposed agreement from President Donald Trump's administration that would bar transgender athletes from participating in girls' sports. The U.S. Health and Human Services said earlier this month that the Maine Department of Education, Maine Principals Association, and high school are each in violation of Title IX because of the participation of transgender athletes. This came after a public spat between Trump and Democratic Maine Governor Janet Mills about the subject. The health department gave the institution 10 days to comply with a voluntary agreement to settle the issues by banning the athletes. The Principals Association, which oversees high school sports in the state, and School Administrative District 51, which includes Greeley High School, both said they will not comply with the agreement. And this, you know, all was sparked and ignited on this with this story from February 20th of this year. Transgender athletes win in Maine sparks backlash. A transgender athlete's victory in a Maine state pole vaulting competition has reignited the debate over transgender participation in girls' sports. He beat the women by 6 inches in the pole vault competition, a competition that he had competed in the previous year as a boy and gotten in 5th place. So there he robs the 1st place victory from the women in a event for which he didn't even place, you know, in the top three as a man. So he just says he's a woman now and goes from 5th place to 1st place and steals the accomplishment from actual women, actual girls who are competing in this. And the Maine government is still doing everything it can to resist the will of the people and continue to, you know, rob young women of their glory. So how can people follow what you're doing and help participate in this, especially if they're in Maine, Corn Pop? How do people follow you, and where can they find, you know, information about the protests you guys are holding?
So tonight, we're actually, if you're an Augusta resident or close to Augusta, tonight we are having something at the Elks Lodge starting at 5:30. All the information is on my X account, PWA1776. But tonight we're having something at the Elks Lodge. It's pretty much, it'll be dinner provided. This is just kind of like a workshop to prepare parents how to go to your local school board, how to fight back with Title IX. But if anyone here in Maine, especially in Augusta, if you want to help me, I am trying to get signatures. I got voter logs for 2024. I know door knocking is not everybody's thing. I will say this. I have knocked on doors, and there's only been one person that turned me down. I've had 4 people tell me that they are registered Democrats, and they don't agree with me 90% of the time. But this is something that we have common grounds on. It's actually what all I need. And then I also have I finally broke down and made it go. I'm just saying go. That's pinned to the top of my profile. If you guys would like to help with the campaign of, you know, making sure that these girls get the medals and stuff that they're provided for, and, you know, printing off paper and stuff like that, that costs money, you know. There's all different ways you can help me out, but what I really need is I need people to help me knock on these doors, because right now that's it's just me. And have a solid chance.
Yeah, I've been following along and watching you sort of lead this movement, and I've really enjoyed it, and I'm glad you called in to talk about it today. I'd like to, we'll DM on X, but I'd love for you to come on with a really good connection and a good, you know, video. We'll do a video interview to talk to you about this, because again, this is what we need all over the country. And it's one of these, you heard Gavin Newsom a couple weeks ago asked about this with Charlie Kirk, and he's like, of course women shouldn't be competing with men. It's about fairness. This is simple. And it's like, okay, so even the extreme left in this country is realizing what a losing issue this is and is backing off and, you know, acting like, oh, we always thought that, you know, women and men should not compete in sports together. So, you know, I guess some Democrats are more extreme than others, or some are slower in coming around to realizing that nobody likes their ideas, or, you know, people actually appreciate fairness. So the people in Maine are still clinging on to this utterly losing issue. And I think it's a brilliant thing for InfoWarriors to be a part of. So Godspeed, Corn Pop, and we'll talk again soon. Go follow Corn Pop at PWA1776 and the Elks Lodge today. PWA1776, the real Corn Pop there on X. Thank you for the call. Let's go to Tim in California. Tim in California, thank you for calling in on this April 1st, Fool's Day. Go ahead, Tim. You're on the air.
Yeah, before I get to that, I just want to say a tip of the hat to Corn Pop. Listen, Corn Pop, that is the way you do it, buddy. Be active and do everything. Be thoughtful. Be unique. And you're right, man. If everyone's going to get a trophy for just competing and they're not really much of a champion, damn sure the girls do deserve that are champions that work their whole lives to get these trophies. They deserve them. They shouldn't be beat by boys pretending that they're girls.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. And you know, I'm sure most people know somebody who has, you know, somebody in your family or something is a dedicated athlete. But, man, I have a cousin who is a state champion in running, and it's like, yeah, you have to be obsessed. You have to literally spend every waking hour like hurting yourself to achieve this. So it's just so brutal to see it taken away from girls who you don't get to the state championship, let alone win it or place a medal, without doing it every day after school, running every single morning, blisters all over your feet. Like it's brutal to steal that from young women. So yeah, thank you. Thank you, Corn Pop, for standing up, and thank you, Tim, for bringing that up. But I know it's not what you called in about.
No, What I called in about is this popped on the internet like 3 hours ago on AOL and Yahoo, and the headline, Warren Buffett acquires Elon Musk's Tesla for $1 trillion in cash. And you read the article and it's amazing. I mean, it gives you all the details. And I was even thinking, you know, Warren Buffett was famous for be greedy when others are fearful. So I was thinking, yeah, man, he's all in. He's all in. And I didn't even think he liked tech stocks. And you get to the very last two italic sentences of the article and it tells you, April Fool's. This article is entirely satirical and was published on April 1st, 2025. But the comedy is you watch how many people published it without reading the entire article. They want to be quick on the draw. And now you go to the pages and it's like, oops, this page isn't there anymore. We don't know what happened, you know?
That's funny. Yeah, I mean, you know, I have to say, we've been doing this show for over 5 years at this point. And there have been a lot of fake stories that I've seen a lot of other people run with and react to. I think we pretty much have like a perfect, we have like a perfect record on this. We really don't fall for these types of stories, and we didn't fall for this one today of Warren Buffett buying Tesla. However, I think, you know, it might not be a bad idea. I don't know. Maybe that's giving into to the terrorists or whatever. But I don't know. It seems like if I was a Tesla shareholder, I would just be like, yeah, can somebody just buy this from Elon Musk, or can we just like not associate Elon Musk with this? Because I don't know, it's just there's something just like distinctly unfair about this corporation suffering so much because of these leftist insane people, and like I don't want there to be like a government bailout of them or something, but you know, clearly they're being forced to face pressures that any other corporation is not faced with. I don't know what to do about it, but I don't know, if I was a Tesla shareholder, I might be like, hey, Elon, why don't you just have a functionary role or whatever? Like, you can still make all the money, you can still own it, but like, I don't know. It's just sucks because, yeah, I mean, if they're attacking people that get Teslas, and, you know, there's all these people out there shopping for cars and have to take that into account and go, well, I really want a Tesla, but I don't want to be attacked, so I'll go shop with somebody else. I mean, they're doing massive, massive damage to this company, and it's totally unfair. But yeah, Warren Buffett has not purchased Tesla. That is not true. Not true. So thank you for warning us about April that, Fool. Tim.
April Fools.
April Fools. Warren Buffett will continue to buy everything else, but not Tesla. Let's go to Wild in Wisconsin. We're going to talk about these Supreme Court elections in Wisconsin. We played the clip of the debate earlier today. A lot of attention being put on this, and I think it's, you know, ultimately important because the Democrats have announced they are going to gerrymander Republican representation out of existence in Wisconsin if they, you know, take this Supreme Court. Go ahead, Wild, you're on the air.
Hey, Harrison. Yeah, I've called. How long have I called from Wisconsin and bothered you since you started there, eh?
Hmm.
And I think it's going to be the last call. Because with Soros taking over here, like we can have the mandate of the people and do everything we can, but then Soros and the outrage mob just comes and neglects the election. You know, elections have consequences here.
Yeah, it's infuriating. Yeah. I'll tell you what, stay on the line, Wild. We'll go back to you on the other side. We've got to take a quick commercial break. Stay with us.
Quite frankly, I didn't develop Optimal Human when Bigley came on as a big sponsor. And I told them the supplements I wanted from the companies I wanted. They went out and did what I wanted. People love them, and they're incredible. The turmeric, the Shilajit, the Irish sea moss, all of it. But they'd had this out for years, and I thought, my green caps are great. And, you know, this other company I use is great because, you know, green superfoods are amazing. And then I finally took it, and Harrison Smith took it, and I was like, my God. And by then, we've been selling it 4 or 5 months, and it was already a top seller. The problem is there's so many ingredients, and it's so hard to source, and it's so clean, high standards, that it's sold out most of the time. We finally got a decent shipment of it in, but we never offered it for subscription because we just couldn't keep it. When you subscribe at thealexshowstore.com, and then they keep it back for you so it never sells out. So go to thealexshowstore.com and get your Optimal Human and so many other incredible products today. Check out all the great Patriot apparel. Make your life more healthy and enriched, and help keep us on the air as we take on the deep state at point blank range and win. The eugenicists over 100 years ago were very public about their plans. They financed major universities. They ran full-page stories and advertisements pushing their propaganda in the New York Times, other major newspapers, that the family as we know it is a bad thing and must be ended. And the first step in that is getting women out of the household and teaching women that cooking dinner and taking care of your sons and daughters and husbands is a bad thing. And I was just sitting here tonight making dinner for my daughter, my 4.5-year-old daughter. My wife makes dinner a lot of times, but I like to make it as well. I love to make breakfast. And literally, it's the funnest thing on earth to make food for your family and be nutritive and then all sit down together and have that communal event. And that's what the system is attacking and bombarding, is our normal biological actions and coming together. They really are sick, evil, scientific cult of filth that want to domesticate us and turn us into lab rats. We cannot let this continue.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ultimate Sambucus is available right now at the alexjonesstore.com. Now, Sambucus is a fancy word for elderberry. This elderberry concoction is mixed with vitamin C and zinc. It's gummies. They're absolutely delicious. I take two of them every single day as prescribed by the directions on the bottle. Helps with things like healthy stress levels, antioxidant immune support. It promotes respiratory health, seasonal support, and it's GMO and gluten-free. Now, not only with Ultimate Sambucus gummies are you getting a delicious way to fight for your immune system, but you're keeping InfoWars on the air. We know that Alex Jones is under relentless attack. We know that InfoWars and this crew are under relentless attack as well. And it's not just us they're coming after. Frankly, it's you. They want to silence you. They want to kill your health. They want to kill your mind. And they want to subjugate you under a new world order government. So as far as I'm concerned, by going to thealexjonesstore.com and getting Ultimate Sambucus gummies, you are not only fighting for your health, but you're fighting against the new world order in the most effective way possible. Please go to thealexjonesstore.com right now.
Methylene blue is all the rage. But for my listeners, we've been talking about it for decades. But finally, they've got factories. They've got laboratories that are producing medical, pharmaceutical, USP grade. And so, our sponsor, thealexjonesstore.com, has it right now. The very highest quality. And I've taken USP grade before, and they claim it's USP grade, and it works great. Massive energy, clarity, focus, no letdown. This is 10 times better. I'm actually scared of this. I've seen Robert F. Kennedy Jr., you know, take three droppers on Air Force One. I took half a dropper, and I'm bouncing off the walls hours later. Ladies and gentlemen, we have the very best methylene blue I've ever had at the lowest price, and it funds the InfoWar, a total 360 win. So get your ultra, and it is ultra, methylene blue right now at thealexjonesstore.com.
InfoWars.com is tomorrow's news today.
You're watching The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
All right, welcome back, folks. Wild in Wisconsin is talking about the Supreme Court election in Wisconsin. Go ahead. We got cut off by the commercial break there, Wild, but I wanted to let you finish your point. You're on the air, sir.
Yeah, I think after all these years, I'm going to execute Plan E and escape because just no point. No matter how hard we try, they just change the rules because they're cheaters. If people don't understand, Elon Musk was here. He understands, but and Trump, but like, they're going to not only gerrymander and take the House, but they're going to change the districts and the voting rules here in Wisconsin. So Wisconsin's going to flip back blue, you know, and then it's going to be in the next election and probably thereafter, you know, a different, it will be a blue state, even though it flips for Trump, you know, so it's such a travesty and pain in the butt, you know. But I also, do we have time to talk about the pyramids and Mars?
What are your thoughts on that?
I called before and spoke years ago about how the pyramids, Nikola Tesla designed his wireless transmission power system somewhat off the pyramid.
Right.
And I think the pyramid system that you're seeing is similar to what Tesla was building with Eiffel at the Eiffel Tower and Wardenclyffe, where the Egyptians with the golden capstone would use the pyramids to transmit electricity and steer boats, like how Nikola Tesla did it. That's how they found cocaine
from South America in the noses of the ancient pharaohs and South American crops because they were able to travel around the entire world with that technology. And in L.A. recently, they dug up in the backyard granite sarcophagus filled with Egyptian artifacts, and they find them all over. It's all the buried history stuff. And with Mars, you were talking about Mars and Phobos and the obelisk there, which I told you guys about before. And you didn't mention that the Ruskies sent a probe over there, and the obelisk disabled it.
Mm.
And the Ruskies were like, what the heck? You know, let's send another one. We messed up. It was the engineers. They sent a second probe, and the obelisk shut that one down, even though it had shielding and protection and everything. So something definitely going on Mars there. Then on the surface, you know, you have caverns that are even bigger than the ones found in Egypt underground, some of them with 15,000-foot ceilings underground, which is crazy. You know, a cavern underground from Olympus Mons, the volcano there. You know, so that I definitely think we should build a space elevator and help Musk to get to Mars and crack these cases, figure out what's going on, all these mysteries of the universe, these wild conspiracy theories, close them once for all. You know, we should be doing ground-penetrating radar into Chicago, under New York, under Epstein Island, all over, you know? And it seems like it's just being slow-rolled by the Epstein documents. It just creeps me out.
Yeah.
You know, like no, it's another layer.
It's absolutely fascinating. It's one of the things where if you've looked into this stuff, it's like, you know, there's a reason why, you know, the Masons say they originated in Egypt. There's a reason why you can find accounts from all the way back in like the 1920s when access to the pyramids was a lot more open, and people, like, there'd be a guide that would take you up to the top of the pyramid and would hold out a light bulb, and the light bulb would light up even though it wasn't plugged into anything because of the electricity moving around, or the images that you've seen of the pyramids in Mexico with what looks like lasers shooting out of it. And then the structures that they find under the pyramids look just like the images of the beams coming out of the pyramids in Mexico. There's definitely something to it. There's definitely something going on there. And, you know, it's one of the things where if you sort of start the assumption of like, hey, the pyramids are a giant machine. They have something to do with energy. It might seem absurd, but then like the more you look into it, the more things seemingly align with that reality. So I don't know. Yeah, the more we look into it, the more it seems confirmed in more than one way. So thank you for that call, Wild. A lot of great stuff. Let's go to Willie in California. Thanks for calling in, Willie. You're on the air about the vaccine conversation that we're viewing earlier.
Hey, Harrison. Yeah, words matter. We know when the definition no longer fits the narrative. We just change the definition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got to quit using the word vaccine for mRNA technology. You know, it's really a medical device with nanotechnology to deliver a payload of RNA instructions. And this emergency use authorization, which should legally not be possible anymore when alternative therapies like ivermectin are now being approved for possible over-the-counter status, in several cases, several states cases.
Yeah,
yeah. And under the EU, because of lowered manufacturing standards, we've forgotten that a lot of the batch and lot numbers are proven terribly inconsistent. If you go to howbadismybatch.com, you'll see the inconsistencies because of this EU ruling. And they're saying that it's been approved, but it's only been approved for EU. And there are no side effects in my mind, just intended consequences.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. No, I mean, again, the everything around the vaccine has just been utterly absurd. I mean, maybe we just, instead of arguing about it, we'll just play this skit that I did, because all of this has been known forever. Right. None of this stuff is like a surprise to us. It's weird seeing people admit what we've known about the vaccine and about COVID all along, but they don't seem to ever, you know, take it to the logical conclusion of this was all on purpose, all by design, and we're being ruled by a consortium of the most evil people in the entire world. Thank you very much for the call, Willie. You're exactly right. mRNA shots are not vaccines, and we really shouldn't call them that. It's hard to talk about things, though, if all the words are wrong. Let's go now to Josh in Georgia. Josh, you want to talk about the bus that hit Virginia Giuffre, the Epstein accuser, the Prince Andrew accuser, apparently now has 3 days to live after she was in a very bizarre car crash where a bus going in, and somebody correct me, 100 kilometers per hour. I think it was actually 110 kilometers per hour. So what that is in miles, who's to say? Who knows? Nobody. Josh, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning, Harrison. First, I wanted to just say Biden was right about one thing. That corn pop is a bad dude.
He's a tough cookie, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I ain't messing with him. No, that's not what I called in about. I was just going to make a little joke, like I was going to give you a Steven Crowder level admonish on that it wasn't miles per hour. It's about 50 miles per hour, that 110 kilometers. But the whole thing is still
68. Same. Crew says 68 miles per hour.
Right. That's still a little fast for bus.
Pretty fast, yeah.
And to say you've got 4 days to live, that sounds like she's going to be put in hiding. I don't know. That's just me talking.
I don't know. I've never heard of that. I mean, 4 days. It's like a very exact amount of time. I don't know, man. I've never heard somebody get in a car wreck and be like, I have 5 days to live. It's like, what? Either it's like, you know, we're keeping her alive as much as possible and she's only going to last hours. Like, you know, she's not going to make it through the night. Or it's like, you know, we're stabilizing. I mean, it's so weird to me. It's like, yeah, I got in this car crash. Now my kidneys are failing and I'll be dead in 4 days. It's like,
right.
I've never heard of that happening in my personal life or in the news. It's very bizarre to me.
So I did call in about another topic. It was kind of stupid and just obvious. It's like, well, it's easy to get consensus. Consensus if you silence all the critics. But since I've been waiting on hold, I want to talk about something else real quick about that kid, you know, who can't get into college.
Mm.
Well, it seems to me like, you know, you're saying you're dooming him to a life of smoking weed and playing games. He's already created a video game. He's got the work ethic of Donald Trump. He's ultra brilliant. Why even go to Harvard where free thought dies? Why not just start making your own company in your garage? You know, you've already got a video game out, making money on it. Make your own video game company. You know, he's that smart, and you can get, you know, you can go to tech school or you can go find people and have clubs. And there's many, many ways around just going to the indoctrination centers. You know,
you're right.
To go do that.
You're exactly right. It's just the problem is that, like, if he wants to do that, you know, that's always a possibility. And it's not like, you know, him going to Harvard means that he can't found his own company. You know, obviously they're going to try to, you know, slot him in to where they think he belongs. But, like, you know, that's always a possibility. And it's just, it's like, if that's what he wants to do, he can do that. But that's a lot of risk. It's a lot of difficult, and you can do it and people do it. And they should do it, and I wish more people would do it. But why should that be his only option? Like, that's always an option. Why should that be his only option? And, you know, some people want to try to go the entrepreneurial route, but it's extremely risky. And especially smart people, like, they're going to be like, well, you know, I'm going to weigh the cost and benefit analysis. And if the cost is my entire life and I'm going to have to take all these risks and put my own property, you know, as collateral for loans and like that, you know, I'd rather just go join a company that I really like. I'd rather make this company better. I'd rather, you know, put my skills towards this industry and join this industry leader in it. It's the fact that possibility is being removed from him. That's horrible. And don't forget, like, you know, this discrimination is everywhere. It's not just the college applications. Bank loans are going to be denied to him, or government subsidies are going to be withheld from him because he's not a black transgender Pacific Islander, right? So it's just being disadvantaged at every pass and constantly having to, like, it's almost funny. It's definitely ironic because the whole argument for affirmative action is like, well, black people can achieve just as much as white people, but they have to just like work twice as hard to get the same amount. And it's like, first of all, that's not true. It's not the case because it's illegal to discriminate. That is the case with white kids. White kids do literally have to do a hell of a lot more and are constantly being disadvantaged, not just in school applications and job applications, but in loan applications or small business subsidies, all these things that are, you know, denoted. It's the women's small business, women-owned companies, and we'll promote you if you're a black-owned company, but not if you're a white-owned company. So, you know, it sucks, but the best way for him to succeed, for this kid to succeed, would be like, find a black guy that you can say owns your company and then get all the subsidies and benefits through that. We're a black-owned business, and just have him as a figurehead, pay him $50,000 a year to, you know, get all the government grants flowing your way. Because literally you have to pretend not to be white in order to succeed with the completely corrupted, fake, distorted capitalism that we run here. You see what I mean, Josh? So I agree with you. I totally agree with you. I think the kid will probably be fine. I've seen enough people, like when you put in the effort that kid put in to get the CV that he already has graduating high school, but then he just ends up in some state school trying to go the right route, trying to do the right thing. Like they're setting him up for failure, going to some state school where he's going to be by far the most accomplished and smartest kid around, and nobody's going to appreciate it. And it's just going to teach him the lesson that like you can work really hard, but like it's for nothing. So you might as well not work hard. So it just sucks for that kid, man.
This is what I think about that. You can say, well, he's being set up for failure, but that to me is a victim mentality, and that he's only being set up for failure if he wants to go down the path that he's told to do, to be a slave to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I think that personally, I think his best option, he's a go-getter. He's a motivated kid. I think his best option is to do it on his own. And the reward for that, rather than, you know, the reward of, you know, 30 years of service, only maybe being beat out by a Indian from a automotive school, you know,
mm-hmm.
whatever, you know, but, you know, I can make, you know, $1 million a year at a company, or I could be Elon freaking Musk.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's risk reward, and I understand that, and I understand the disadvantages, but man. What if he takes this and says, it's like, okay, I was just watching Valuetainment, and they were talking about Michael Jordan was cut from his high school basketball team. He wasn't even the first drafted, but now he's the best basketball player of all time. You know,
right.
Whereas LeBron James was handed everything, and he's just a whiny little biznatch.
Yeah.
And handed everything. If you're handed, okay, he wouldn't have been handed the Harvard entrance. You know, he worked for it, but then what would he do at Harvard? He'd be indoctrinated into you suck. You're stupid.
Well, that's where the issue. Like what we're dealing with here is two different problems or two different angles on the problem. Like on the individual level, what's best for that kid is not to worry about getting into Harvard, not to sweat that stuff. I think you're right. You know, founding his own company, getting a head start. Not wasting those 4 years at state school, but instead just, founding a company and getting experience under his belt. I think you're right on the individual level. But on the societal, like systematic level, America used to have a system by which exceptional students, people capable of exceptional thinking and accomplishment, were identified by their school, given extra resources, extra support. They were then funneled into a university system where they were given the best education they possibly could, and they were funneled, or you know, the corporations chose from these Ivy Leagues the best people to be slotted into positions where they can take that talent and the resourcefulness and the above and beyond characteristic that these people show, and they can be applied to our biggest corporations, our most important endeavors, and like the whole becomes greater than the sum of its parts because you have all these brilliant people identified early, given extra resources, funneled up to positions of power, and able to use their talents and capabilities for the benefit of everybody. Now, the most talented, resourceful, innovative, entrepreneurial people are instead being kneecapped, like they're being hobbled. They're instead of being given extra resources, they're having resources taken away because it's you have an unfair advantage because you grew up in a house with parents that read to you. So therefore, you have to be disadvantaged to make up for the fact that you do better than everybody else. It's this drive towards the lowest common denominator and handicapping ourselves by disadvantaging the most capable people in our society and not allowing them to put their talents to the best use in whatever industry or you know, activity that they could really contribute in. Instead, they're just being discriminated against and disadvantaged and disenfranchised and left on their own. Some people are exceptional and will make it on their own, but as a society and as a collection of institutions, we are just totally broken and not fit for purpose at this point. So you have, and again, so it's not just about this one kid. It's about the tens of millions of young guys out there that are being discriminated against constantly, disadvantaged constantly, still achieve great things, but are not allowed to, you know, use their talents for the benefit of America because they're not the right skin color. So it's absurd. And it all needs to be reformatted and we should really wipe the slate clean when it comes to the Ivy League institutions because they've been so captured and warped at this point. But I would like to live in a country where our best and brightest are provided pathways to employ those talents and skills in the biggest possible arenas. Instead, it's like the best and the brightest, like. Again, just as a society, is that really what you want? You want this incredibly talented, motivated, accomplished kid, and it's like you have two options. Either you can have him join a collection of other really accomplished, motivated people, and together they can build this great company, or you want to just like strip him of any connections, deprive him of any, you know, stepping stone path towards greatness, and just go, you're on your own, good luck. It's just like, yeah, he can succeed. I'm sure he can. But our entire society was built around the idea that these types of exceptionally meritorious people could benefit our country and should be given every resource available. Instead, that's been inverted, where now it's the least accomplished, the least capable people who get the vast majority of resources spent on them, just trying to get them up to average, while the people that are above average are either allowed to languish or actually brought down to average. Because inequality is the biggest evil. So it's all sick and stupid. Thanks for the call, Josh. Let's go to Judy in Florida. Judy in Florida on line four. Go ahead on vaccine skepticism. You're on the air.
Yeah, I just want to take it from the 30,000-foot view, I guess. When I was watching the what you were showing in the debate, it's perfectly obvious to me that that so-called doctor, which is nothing more than another version of Patrick Bateman, was yes. Debating and just being condescending to the people that were actually looking for answers. And it has nothing to do with incompetence. And, of course, he changes the subject and gives a new version of reality because all he's doing is insulting people.
Right.
When you condescend to people, all you're doing is insulting them. And the actual human suffering, of course, that they're enduring gets thrown out the window because he doesn't even see them as being human.
Right.
And that's really screwed up. But I wanted to, you know, point out also the guy that the Hispanic guy that he was first talking with, this fake doctor, happened to see him on the whatever podcast on Sunday, and I watched it for a little while. This guy is a really staunch Christian and a debater, and you know, it was the fact that he mentioned in the debate as well as on the podcast absolute truth. When you yep. talking about absolute truth with what they call 304s or women that are just they don't look out for their own best interest because they're that much of a degenerate, you know, it's very sad to watch. But
yeah.
It was a shame that he couldn't go far enough in talking to that pretty boy
yeah.
about mRNA technology. Because, I mean, maybe that would have short-circuited this guy's brain. Okay, you know, how do I talk about the fact that it's not a vaccine, but, you know, actually people are, you know, their whole genetics are being damaged and changed. And it's, you know, and I'd like to point out one other thing. It's, you know, we have to go back to the fact that, you know, it was for the West that the doses were given. The people that were coming in illegally were not required.
Yeah.
So, you know, you know, in this 30,000-foot view, what you see is we're being dehumanized and being depopulated. And we hear about these wonderful, I'm going to go to white men, you know, excuse me, sorry, Asians, I'm not going to talk about you. You look at these wonderful white men like you, my son, you know, whoever, John Doyle, Elijah Schaefer, you know, the list goes on, right? You think about all these people that are, you know, pouring into the discourse, just how we're being systematically dehumanized and then, you know, later on depopulated, you know, yeah, let's get back to absolute truth. And people are going to have to discern that for themselves. My favorite scripture right now, and it's funny, it's April Fool's Day, is Second Thessalonians 2:3. People can go look up, you know, that scripture on their own. But but here's a headline. I hope this is an April Fool's Day joke, but it is a news agency out of the UK that is talking about it, is that a toddler, 2 to 4 years of age, was suspended from a nursery after being accused of being transphobic.
I have the story right here, and we'll close out the show with this. Here's 2 Thessalonians 2:3. Let no one in any way deceive you, for it will not come unless the apostasy comes first, and the man of lawlessness is revealed, the son of destruction. Here's the story you're talking about. UK nursery suspends toddler over transphobia. A toddler between the ages of 2 and 4 years old has been suspended from a nursery in the United Kingdom after being confused of transphobia and homophobia. If a writer had pitched this story to The Onion a decade ago, the satire site wouldn't have touched it with a 10-foot pole. It would have been too ridiculous. But in 2025, it is merely the latest episode in the insane cultural experiment that trans activists and their institutional allies have inflicted upon the West. According to data for the Department of Education obtained by the Telegraph through a Freedom of Information request, a child of either 3 or 4 years of age was suspended from a UK state school during the 2023-2022 academic year for abuse against sexual orientation and gender identity. A toddler was kicked out of school for anti-LGBT bigotry. Understandably, the unnamed school in question did not provide any further details of the toddler's suspension, but the Independent noted that data does show 94 pupils at the state's primary schools were suspended or permanently excluded for homophobia or transphobia in 2022 and 2023. And 10 of the suspended pupils were from year 1, and there were from year 2, where the maximum age is 7. So hundreds of toddlers suspended from school for not being gay.
The 8th coin in the limited edition series is now exclusively available at thealexjonesstore.com. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 8th in the series. Your past purchases have kept us on the air. There's only 4,000 of this coin. I designed all the others, but the crew said, hey, people keep asking for an Alex Jones coin. This is the first and probably the only one we'll ever do. InfoWars on the back, myself, the American flag on the front with my signature. It is vital to keep us on the air. Plus, it's an amazing coin. All the other in the last 7, the last few years we put out, you look at them online, they're selling for way more than we printed them up. But I'm not even pushing it as a collectible coin. It is a fundraiser to keep us on the air. We absolutely need the funds. It is historic, and it costs us about $40 for each coin, for the silver and for having it printed or minted in Missouri. And you can get it for $99 if you're not a VIP member at thealexjonesstore.com, for $70-something if you are. People love the coins. It keeps us on air. It's a fundraiser.
Here's where all eyes now are on gold and silver, because gold went over $3,000 an ounce. It's at an all-time high. That's a very strong technical and psychological threshold number, that 3,000. So now that the world is looking at gold, the world is also going to be looking at silver. So even the massive growth that we've already seen, I'm guessing it's just the beginning.
Gut level. Where do you think gold is in a month?
3,100 in a month, like in the next 3 to 4 weeks. And then I think it gets to 3,200 by the beginning of the summer. And we could literally see 4,000 as momentum starts to gather and as the eyes of the world get on it. And then silver, you know, probably 50 to 75.
People need to call you, do a free consultation, leave your name and number, 720-605-3000, kpm.com/gold. Do the form. They'll call you back. They'll do a free consultation. They can roll over your IRAs, 401ks. Do it now, folks. Dr. Kirk Elliott, thank you so much.
My pleasure. See ya.
It's good to be right, isn't it? Wow.
You're listening to The Alex Jones Show.